opportunity to present to you on the work that Facet has been doing. The Facet Party is made up of myself as the CEO of Facet, our COO, Nadine Cater, our Vice Chair, Robert Kappa, and a member of our board, Andrew Carlson. As the Chair Lady indicated, we did give in apologies from our chairperson, Mpiseng Slabani, who's not able to join us this morning. Moving on to the presentation, we are going to go through briefly what Facet is about, give you a bit of background in terms of the sector profile, look at some of the financial information and governance issues surrounding the CETAs, have a brief look at our NSDS Year 9 achievements, which is talking to the strategy that we face on a national level and how Facet has interpreted that strategy. And then we're going to spend some time on looking at the strategies we have at Facet in terms of preventing job losses. And we're going to look at that from two perspectives: how we prevent job losses for employed people within our sector, and how we address the needs of currently unemployed people and give them opportunities to enter into our sector. We'll then look at some of the highlights at Facet, and as the Chair indicated, we'll spend a little bit of time looking at the challenges that Facet faces. Both Nadine and myself will be doing parts of the presentation, and we hope that we'll be in a position to cover most of the issues that have been raised by the Chair in her introduction this morning, and also that were included in the covering letter that we received when we were invited to the session. If we look at the Facet sector profile, it's very interesting to see that the financial disciplines that we look after cover all of the broader financial areas except for banking and insurance. There's a specific CETA that looks after banks and micro-lenders, and a CETA that looks after the insurance industry, and we cover all the rest of the disciplines within the broader financial arena. From the statistics in front of you, you'll notice that the majority of members in the Facet sector come from the accounting, tax, and audit disciplines. They make up the majority of organizations in the Facet sector, and they also make up just under 50% of the employees in our sector. Another very interesting dynamic to the Facet organization is that we cover a very large portion of government and public entities. The National Treasury, SARS, and the Auditor General are all also members of Facet. And even though those organizations only make up six in number within the Facet sector, that subsector accounts for 14% of the employees within the Facet stable. So we are looking after both public sector and private sector interests in terms of the work that we do within the CETA. If we look at the organizational profile of our sector, if we look from a size perspective, it's very interesting to see that more than 96% of levy-paying organizations within Facet employ less than 50 people. In fact, about 80% of the organizations in Facet employ less than 15 people. So the sector is predominantly a small sector. It is predominantly made up by small professionals who run small practices and employ a number of support staff. If, on the other hand, we look at the employees in our sector, 65% of the employees in the Facet sector work in organizations that employ more than 50 people. So the majority of our workers in the Facet sector are employed by medium and large practices or organizations, but the majority of organizations are very small, and that comes with a very different set of challenges when we're looking at skills development and growth in the economy. Leading on from that, if we look at the geographic distribution of the sector, I think, as is common with most sectors that the CETAs cover, the majority of our organizations and employees are based in the big three economic hubs, Gauteng, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. But once again, due to the nature of the sector and the nature particularly of accounting services, we find that there are accounting practices throughout the nine provinces, and that there are accounting practices in very small towns. So places like Daar, Springbok, Central are places where we have members in the facet sector, and we also ensure that we get to those centres at least two or three times a year, so that small practices are also given the opportunity to be upskilled in terms of the work that we do. If we look at the race and gender profile of our sector, we see that the facet sector, 47% of the employees in the facet sector are black. If we look at professional level, 38% of the professionals in the facet sector are black, and 48% of the professionals in the sector are women. At manager level, 28% of our managers are black, and 33% of our women are black. So there is definitely a gender and a race imbalance in the sector that we represent, and one of the things that FACET has done is worked very hard to try and address the race and gender imbalances that we find. And at this point in time, more than 50% of the learners and trainees in the FACET sector are black. And we've moved that figure from 27% when we started 9 years ago to 51% today. The move up the occupational categories into professional and manager level does take a while to feed through. The average time that it takes for a professional accountant to be trained in our sector is anything from 7 to 10 years. So that's the training cycle that we are looking at for professionals who then have the opportunity to be classed as professionals on occupational category and also to become managers in the firms. So we are moving, we are seeing movement in the professional and manager level, but that will take time because those learners need to complete the learnership programs and then mature into the different levels within the occupational framework of our sector. Moving on to some of the financial information, and the members have received a copy of our annual report, Madam Chair, so I'm not going to speak a lot to the financial information, but I think it is important just to place it in context when we start to look at some of our highlights and some of the challenges that we face. From a levy income point of view, FACET is a relatively small CETA. We have about 197 million that comes into the CETA on an annual basis through the levy system. And you'll see from the slide in front of you that our total expenditure is actually 220 million. So what that is showing is that we are spending more than the levy income that FACET receives, and we are starting to use our reserves that were built over past years, and we are also using the interest that we earn on that revenue through the course of the year. So in a normal accounting environment, if you were a business in the private sector, that figure would probably give you something to be concerned about, whereas in the CETA environment, that's actually a very, very positive move, that the funds are moving very quickly through the organization and we're not building up any reserves. Our cash and cash equivalents at this point in time is sitting at 129 million, and we are aware that that is probably the line item from the balance sheet where CETAs get a lot of criticism from the press. We need to note that that cash and cash equivalents in the FACET bank account is actually money that's been held in trust for obligations that we already have. So part of that 129 million, Madam Chair, is money that we owe to FACET employers for the mandatory grant, because the timing between when the mandatory grant comes in and when we pay those funds out, there's anything up to a nine-month lag there. Those funds are also held in trust for projects that we support, and the majority of the projects in FACET are longer-term projects. The average learnership in the FACET sector is 3 years. For those people who are aware of the sector, it's the old traditional chartered accountant articles. So you go into that training period for at least 3 years, anything up to 5 years. And if we are going to support learners from the beginning to the end of that intervention, we need to have the money up front to do that. So that 129 million is also earmarked towards those projects that will serve over a 3-year period. Also very important to note that our admin expenditure, as reflected on the income statement, is 9.1%, so it's well below the 10% limit that is set by the skills development levy interventions. But more importantly, the 9.1 that you see on the income statement is a figure that tells us the expenditure level of the CETA, but our actual expenditure in terms of the definition of 10% is sitting at 7.1%. And the difference between those figures are because you need to remove depreciation from the income statement because that is not a cash calculation. So that's just a little bit of financial information. If we look at governance, it's another area that we've had a lot of newspaper coverage from a CETA perspective. And FACET is in a very good position. As the CEO of FACET, I think you'd appreciate the challenges of trying to get a budget through of a board of 16 people who all come with an accounting background. So I think the governance framework is very, very strong within the CETA. This is the ninth year in a row that we've had an unqualified audit report. So the CETA has really had unqualified rulings from the Auditor General since we started. However, having said that, the sector is extremely committed to good corporate governance, and FACET has taken on that sector ethical and moral obligation. Not only do our management board do self-assessments on an annual basis, which is a requirement of King II, but we've already extended that to all of our committees. So our management board and all our committees undergo self-assessments on an annual basis. We also pushed the bar this year, and we had ourselves assessed by the Institute of Internal Auditors, and we are the first CETA and only one of four organizations in South Africa to have reached full compliance with the International Standards of Internal Audit. So we take corporate governance extremely seriously, and we actually had a board meeting yesterday, and one of the items on our agenda was how FACET is going to align our corporate governance to make sure that we meet King III. Now, King III was only released on the 1st of September, and already we're looking at how we can implement that within the CETA environment. We also really pleased that the audit of CETAs is moving away from the audit of financial performance only, and is going to include performance auditing. We think as custodians of public funds, that we need to be accountable not only for the amount of money we spend, but more importantly, the way in which we spend it. And I think the audit of performance information is going to give Parliament a lot more information in terms of the use of that money and the return on investment from skills development. The Auditor General has a very close relationship with FACET because not only are they our external auditors, but also they are a member of FACET. And as a public entity, you would be aware that public entities do not have to pay the 1% levy. It is a voluntary decision that they make. The Auditor General has chosen to pay the full 1%, and they participate with FACET as every single private sector employer does. They have very good training programs, and a number of the clerks at the Auditor General are learners registered on FACET's learner database. Having said all of that, what's more important and more rewarding to us as a management team at FACET is to see how FACET can make the future count, because that's really what we're all about. And hopefully our short video clip is going to give you some information to show you what we're about. In terms of lots of numbers and figures. We really believe that the heartbeat of the CETAs and the heartbeat of FACET is definitely the impact that we make on the lives of specific learners. So sorry about that. I'm going to quickly run through the, once we've addressed, as Cheryl indicated, the finances, the governance, etc. CETAs are then in a position to work with the Department of Labor and really start looking at working through the actual achievements. As the Chair has indicated, the
committee has already looked at some of the results through the annual report. So I'm really just going to pull out some of the main areas. Indicator 1.2, for instance, will look at how we disseminate what is referred to as the CETA's scarce and critical skills list. You'll also see in 2.1 and 2.2 on the screen that we have quite a large participation rate from our employers. And that is extremely important, because if we are looking at the actual skill shortage, specifically in our sector, we find that there are graduates that are ready to enter the sector, but we do need the participation of employers to allow them to gain the work experience, which is absolutely necessary for that three-year after-school period that Cheryl referred to. 2.8 is of particular importance to us, as well as 4.1. It deals specifically with the actual learning program. So once we have looked at the scarce and critical skills listed teachers, we're able to develop learning programs to match that scarce skill. Those learning programs range from short courses, so we have been able to train people up from half-day to two-day courses, but the length of the program can range up to 3 to 4 years, particularly if it's the learnership and that learner is gaining work experience in the workplace. 4.3, as an indicator, looks specifically at new ventures. And, of course, this is extremely important, that once the learner has been trained in a learnership, what happens to that learner afterwards? And with the affected sector, the nature of the training enables that learner to do one of two things. If the learner remains in the accounting practice, the learner can themselves develop their own base of clients. And that, in a sense, increases the client base in that practice and therefore indirectly leads to economic growth. If the learner feels that they are equipped to set up their own practice, then they're able to start their own practice in their own new venture and develop their own client base in that regard. And very often that learner themselves takes on new learners. So there's a full continuous cycle of learning and training that's taking place through the learning program. 5.3 is also an important foundation for learning. We all know that it's not just what you learn and how you learn, but making sure that the quality of training is of the correct quality. So there's no real point in having somebody sitting in a program for 3 years if that program is not being monitored and being evaluated by the CETA through their quality assurance structures to make sure that when the learner does complete, they actually do meet the requirements of that profession. As Cheryl indicated in the introduction, of interest particularly at a national level is that the skills shortage, or addressing the skills shortage, needs to make sure that people have work, that they have employment. One of the areas that we focus on is making sure that people that are already employed will retain that employment and stay employed. The very nature of the sector means that people that are professionals have to keep up with their professional status. They've got to continuously reskill themselves and upskill themselves. In the financial sector, as I'm sure in many others, the ever-changing, fast-paced world we live in means that there are continuous updates that they need to keep abreast with. One of the interventions that FACET has introduced to make sure that people that are employed stay upskilled is what we refer to as a lifelong learning project. That project means that FACET is able to give our employers and our learners free training up to 9 to 10 times a year on specific areas of focus where they need to remain skilled. We've been able to train 12,000 people last year on that type of project. We also give employers specific cash grants to enable them to fund their own training. So if they feel that the FACET training is not yet enough and they want to do a longer program, or, for instance, for the strategic cash grant, they may want to do their own internship or offer a bursary or offer ABET, FACET is able to give them a cash grant that enables them to then fund that training. The learnership cash grant is specifically for the learnership purpose. In the FACET sector, the nature of the learnership is of a long duration, at least 3 years for the majority of learners, and therefore we are able to give employers a cash grant to fund some of that training. We also look at the unemployed, because it's good and well you can employ people in the sector, employed, but how do people actually get into the sector? I'm going to see this video clip work. It's not, you go to the story over here as well. The story of Issa would have been quite interesting, and I'll run through her life story very quickly. She's a learner that comes from the Eastern Cape. She was a graduate, but she could not find employment in the Eastern Cape. On her own, she traveled to Gauteng and actually landed up in Pretoria, where she then saw an advert relating to a facet development project. That project recruits learners that have got their undergraduate degree, and puts them through a work readiness program for 4 to 4.5 months. Well, Yusuf is currently has completed her training and is looking forward to qualifying as a chartered accountant. Well, Yusuf is one of many life stories of thousands of learners that SACID has put through the work readiness program. Work readiness specifically because that is one of the gaps we've identified. As I said, the graduate is there, the work is there. But very often the employer doesn't know how to bridge that gap, how to get that ready learner ready for the place of work. For the unemployed people, once that learner has completed that program, we're able to assist the employer with a learnership cash grant, places the learner on a learnership. And the other aspect that we encourage with the unemployed learners is we ask them to go back to the learners that are currently studying. Because one of the gaps, as Cheryl indicated in the sector profile, is the management and professional level is still very white male sector. So it's very important that the learners that we develop, previously disadvantaged learners, go back to their communities and go back to their own learners and create role models where they can say that if we used to work on the Eastern Cape, can be unemployed and become a chartered accountant, then definitely so can I. So we use again the strategic cash grant and the learnership cash grant to assist the employer to take those unemployed learners and give them the necessary workplace learning. So Cheryl will look at some of the highlights around the strategic intervention.
Thanks, Maddie. I think what we've seen from Boyiswe's story and her success story is in the pack that we've given you so that you've got it on record. And also from a number of employers who've taken on SACID learners in the sector, is that one of the most important things when young people enter the SACID sector is that the quality of work that they're doing when they're placed on the learnership and when they're given employment has to be up to international standards. South Africa is recognized by the International Federation of Accountants, and we need to maintain those standards in all the training we do. And the young people then come in with excellent opportunities to get quality work and also to get sustainable jobs in organizations. If we look at some of the highlights that SACID has achieved over the last 9 years, we've had more than 31,000 learners sign on to our learnerships. Just over 15,000 of those learners have already completed their learnership, and those learners who have completed their learnership, 100% of them are placed in full-time employment. Now, one of the questions might be, we've got 31,000 in and only 15 out, which looks like a 50% success rate. We need to remember that we're speaking about a 3 to 5 year period that these learners are on the learnership. So it's not that 50% have dropped out. We've had a very low dropout rate. The majority of those learners are still undergoing that 3 year training period. On our development projects, of which Vuyiswa was an example, we've spent over 256 million on those development projects. They range from assisting matriculants who've come out of matric with poor maths and English marks on bridging programs to enable them to enter BCOMS at university, right up to postgraduate level, where we assist learners to write their professional qualifying exams to become chartered accountants. We've supported over 12,500 learners through this process over the last 9 years. And our requirement when we partner with somebody on those development projects is at least 70% of those learners have to find permanent jobs in the FACET sector. And we've achieved that. The other 30% of learners that go through these interventions get picked up by other sectors. In fact, one of the development projects that we support that FACET was funding has been supported by other CETAs as well, because the need for those young graduates having come out of this program is not only in our sector. It's also important to note that FACET is a feeder sector for the economy. We train accountants in the FACET sector, and then they move on to commerce and industry. So you'll find accountants in Eskom, in the banks, in telecom, in government. And it's very important for us to realize that even though retention is a challenge, that that's the nature of the sector. Nadine has already told you about our lifelong learning program, which is a continuous professional development program, and we've supported nearly 42,000 people on that intervention in 9 years. Our participation rates are also phenomenal. More than 83% of FACET levy payers claim mandatory grants back from us. So the sector has a culture of training, and we tap into that. More than 12,000 SMMEs also benefit from FACET. And one of the unique things that I think FACET does is our lifelong learning events and our cash grants are also available to non-levy paying firms in the FACET sector. So if you are a small organization, your payroll is below 500,000 a year, your organization still needs skills development. And we support those organizations because they're very, very good training grounds for young people coming through. With regard to the NSDS 2 targets, we're well on track to reaching our five-year targets. So hopefully our figures will be able to boost the national figures. The chair also asked us to look at some of the challenges that we're facing, chair. And what we've done is we've grouped those challenges into three specific areas. The first area we've referred to as pipeline challenges. And if we look at the pipeline challenges, some of them that we face in the FACET sector is poor matric results. A prerequisite for entering a professional sector is to come out with a very, very good mark in mathematics. And a lot of our young people don't come out with that mark in mathematics. So they are blocked entry into the sector. We do have a number of bridging programs we support and a number of alternatives, but I think it is a national problem. One of the other issues that we face is the high dropout rate at tertiary institutions. We've all read about it. We've all read about the concerns universities had this year with regard to their decreasing first-year pass rates. Once again, it's not something that we can directly get involved in, but it is something where we try and help small groups of learners. And then, as I mentioned earlier, FACET is a feeder sector for the broader economy. So as fast as we train chartered accountants, they get pinched by my colleagues in ETDP and CHITA. And we don't have a problem with that because we know that's the nature of the sector and we have an obligation to the broader economy. So those pipeline challenges, I think we're all aware of. It's not something that FACET can address directly. It's outside of our scope of influence, but we do try and do what we can. Secondly is the impact of the recession. The FACET sector has not been directly impacted as yet in terms of numbers of employees by the recession. We have done some research into the downscaling of numbers in our sector. And what we've seen is that the FACET sector has decreased by less than 5% over the last year. The majority of that decrease has been in small and medium-sized accounting practices, and it's come about because learners are finishing their learnership and moving out of the sector into other sectors. So we do not have a retrenchment problem in the sector, but we have a natural attrition taking place and less people are being taken on to fill those vacancies that are arising. If we look at the future skills development landscape, Madam Chair, I think, and you asked us to look at the concerns around that, the biggest concern that FACET has around the future landscape is the uncertainty surrounding the issue. So it's not so much what the decision is going to be, but it's the importance of that decision being made. Because we've built up an incredible momentum in the CETAs over the last 9 years. We have long-term cycles happening in this FACET sector, which is a highly skilled sector, which takes 7 to 10 years to train people through the system. And with the uncertainty, we're just very, very scared that the change will decrease the pace and rate at which we are able to train young people and put us back. We also believe very strongly that it's important for decisions to be made around NSDS 3 before the future CETA landscape is discussed, because strategy has to come before structure. And once we have the strategy, we believe we will then be in a better position as stakeholders involved in skills development to see what the best delivery mechanisms will be. We've also created a huge momentum in NSDS 2. You saw our achievements against the NSDS 2 targets for last year and for the 9 years. And what we're also very concerned about is that we seem to be driving skills development in 5-year cycles. So every 5 years, we're re-looking at the question of what should the strategy be, what should the CETA landscape be. And that's very disruptive, particularly in highly skilled sectors where the training cycle is actually longer than the skills development planning cycle. So we think organizations are matured and we should be applying our minds to ways in which we can make transition a lot more seamless so that delivery is able to continue on an ongoing basis and not be chopped into these chunks. So I think, Madam Chair, that is the information that we'd like to present to you. If there are any questions from the committee, we'll endeavour to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. James, for your presentation. It's up to you, members, to question, clarity, and comments. Honourable Law? Okay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I would like us to follow the same process of Tuesday, where we allow all the sitters to make presentations, and then we note the areas of questions. And then after they've all, because you will find a situation where similar questions will be raised in different presentations. So my proposal is that if we can follow the format of Tuesday, where we allow all sitters who are here to make presentations, we note the areas of questions. And then when that time for questioning comes, if a question is specific to a particular sitter, we'll indicate. But if then, it will be a question to all the sitters for them to comment on that, we'll indicate that. I was just requesting that we follow that format, Madam Chair. If it's fine with my colleagues.
Okay, those are the challenges of democracy. You are chairing, but if those people feel that you must go this direction, you have to. I agree. So, we can take Chita, and we have Ms. Kilebukele. I'm not going to pronounce the name. I'm going Dilotsohle, okay? Dilotsohle. And the chairperson, Mr. Jacob Mabena. Mr. Mabena, you can introduce the rest, please. And then who's going to be doing the presentation? The CEO. Okay. Then let's give it to her. Just introduce everybody to the side, and then we can continue with you.
Madam Chair and members of the House, on my left I have my chairperson, Mr. Jacob Mabena, and behind me I have on the left Mr. Robin Atta, who is the deputy chairperson of the board, and on his right there's Mr. Farad Motala, who is our chief financial officer, and connecting the technology there is the group executive for government and support services, Mr. Trevor Cheney. Thank you. And myself, I'm Clem Kletilosoke. I'm the CEO of CIS. Thank you. You will tell us when you are ready. Are you ready, Mr. Kletilosoke? Or you are waiting for them to connect? Okay. And so the questions were clear. There were no clarities on the first presentation whilst we were waiting for this connection. No clarities. Everything was clear. Okay. Starting point, we just do a blitz on our vision and mission we do have, and the next is the table of contents. We will be taking you through our strategic objectives, our governance structure, the profile of our levy paying companies, the organizational highlights, and cutting across through to the SLA highlights and then achievements, something on the training layoff. And then I'll hand over to the CFO to take us through our financial performance, and then we'll conclude. Our strategic objectives are captured there. We focus on our scarce and critical skills. We ensure that we exceed expectations of our stakeholders and customers. And we actually focus on training, multidimensional training in the chemical sector. And of course, we want to attract, motivate, and retain competent people. Continuing on strategic objectives, we focus on processes and systems, because without those integrated procedures, also, you cannot function as an organization and as a sector. And we also do effective gathering and investment of funds for the benefit of the sector. Organizational performance is also key to the CHITA. In terms of our governance structure, we have a CHITA governing board. We have the EXCO, the executive committee. We have our functional committees. We also have the management committee. And of course, sectorally, we have five chambers: petroleum and base chemicals, pharmaceuticals and FMCG. We also have explosives and fertilizers, specialty chemicals and surface coatings, and we have glass. Those are our five chambers. What is the profile of our sector? We have five chambers, which are also further subdivided into nine subsectors. So those are the chambers that I've already mentioned. This graph actually shows, according to the five chambers that I've mentioned, the distribution of companies across the five chambers. As you can see, petroleum and base chemicals chamber has the highest number of companies there, followed by specialty and surface coatings, and then you move to FMCG, and then glass. And these figures were as of April 2009. And then levy paying companies are also subdivided there per subsector as of April 2009. And as you can see, across the nine subsectors that I've already mentioned, you have the number of companies going up. You can actually see the distribution of small, medium, and large enterprises. move on now to the organizational highlights. I think we all know one of the issues as I would sit as the CEO of Facet said is compliance, but also delivery. And I can safely say that the cheetah has received unqualified audit by the Auditor General for 8 consecutive years. We can also highlight to the House that we have consistently received the green status from SASPA. In the past year, we've also received an award from SASCA, the South African Society for Corporate Education, and I must say we are the only teacher who received this award. Continue with organizational highlights. Looking at the shortage of people who actually not high in matric results, we started an initiative, a national initiative, which we piloted in the Northwest Province in the past year, of actually recognizing matric trailblazers. Those are young people who received distinctions in mathematics and physical science, and we actually go to the province and actually recognize them. We give them starter packs for the university, things that parents normally do not afford, but we actually track them throughout, and some of them actually end up being beneficiaries of our bursary program. We further awarded bursaries worth 1 million to 51 students addressing the needs of the chemical industry, and you would see in the annual report the distribution according to the provinces. I must say here that one of the challenges is that the uptake in some provinces actually reflects the poor performance of the province in the matric math and science results. It does reflect that. We have indeed maintained our SABS, the South African Bureau of Standards, the ISO 9000:2001 standard, and the certificate of recognition we do have, and we still have, and it hasn't been taken away from us, and we will sustain that. A further organizational highlight is actually on governance. Governance is a cornerstone of an organization, and indeed, as the Auditor General, we have highlighted it in bold because it is in our annual report. This is one sentence which actually states that the cheetah has continued to comply with legislation relating to governance matters and adopted and applied good governance practices throughout the year. Not me, Chair, Madam Chair, it is the Auditor General. We have the service level agreement with the DOF. We have reflected everything in the annual report. However, we just picked on those that we have exceeded on, and we put them before you to indicate our performance against them. Number of people who carry out the programs, the number of firms that received WSP AI3 grants for 08-09 financial year, the number of small levy-paying firms supported by the CETA, number of workers that have registered either at level 1 to 4, number of workers that have entered learning programs, number of organizations supported by the CETA like NGOs, CBOs, and co-ops, number of unemployed people that entered learning programs. And in fact, the next 3 columns actually indicate what the target was, per indicator, and how we have performed, and in fact, how we have exceeded. We do have areas of challenges, but we just want to highlight those where the CETA has exceeded expectations. Under learner achievements, we have reflected here, as per our annual report, the total number of learners is 2,543, but the split you can see between employed versus the unemployed. And I must say at this point in time that the CETA have started a research project to actually track particularly the unemployed. And we have begun to actually say, what is it that we can do to make sure that they are placed, and those that are placed, can they be sustained where they are? It is a difficult and challenging project, however, we have decided to bite the bullet. We have done the geographic split in terms of learner achievement, that is per the province. As you can see, Gauteng has the biggest number,
maybe bring Yellow Bay, and followed by the rest of the provinces in terms of learner achievement. Coming to the training layoff scheme, I must say that the Chita Governing Board has ring-fenced 10 million from the discretionary grant fund, but I can also say that further funds can be reserved, and I have this from my board, I'm not saying this, can be reserved depending on demand. Currently, we are in the process with Department of Labor, the NSF and the CCMA in streamlining the operational processes of investment of these funds. And therefore, in essence, we are awaiting the implementation announcement by the Minister of Labor. Having done the highlights and some of the achievements, I would now hand over to the Chief Financial Officer to take us through our financial performance.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam CEO, honorable members, chairperson. I'm just going to be very quick and succinct around the annual financial results and over the period. As our CEO has mentioned, we received an unqualified audit report for the 8 consecutive years since inception, and that is a really strong achievement. In terms of our levies, the last year, 2008-09, has shown a substantive increase of 26.3% in skills development levy income from 2008. We've done research in the sector and looked at the percentage payroll increment, because our levies is based on the 1% payroll base. And what we found is, although the general increment around the sector was in the region of 10 to 12%, the CHITA levies increased substantially higher, and this was quite pervasive in confirming that the impact of the CHITA in terms of skilling in the sector, as well as the expansion of the labor force in our view. In terms of the employer grant and project expenses, we paid out, this accounts for 73% of our grant levy income received, and this increased substantively by in the region of 31 million from 122 million in 2008 to 153 million in 2009. Over the page is a graphical analysis of the grant and project expenditure against the SDL income over the 9-year period since inception. And as you can see, the expense project and grant expenses have increased over the entire period from 2001 to 2009. Similarly, the levy income has also increased substantially. So we look at year 2001, where we dispersed around 21 million in grants and projects. We now disperse in the region of 152 million in 2009. So that also has been a substantial increase over the period of time. In terms of the return on invested funds, we received an amount of approximately 24.7 million, which has been reallocated back to the sector for training initiatives. In terms of the revenue increased by 31% from 221 million to 291 million, and I've expanded on that issue in terms of the SDL income increasing substantively during the 2009 financial year. Total expenses as a percentage of the total revenue was at 71%. Very importantly, in terms of the reserves and discretionary reserves, especially of CETAs, in the CHITA, our discretionary reserves have been fully committed, 100%, meaning we have no surplus in terms of funds. Currently, 162 million is committed to discretionary grant contracts, 90 million has been approved by the committee in the current year, and a further 26 million is currently committed in projects and skills priorities. In terms of the financial year end 2009, there was a 38 million surplus of reserves which was transferred to the discretionary reserve, and this is made up of savings in administration, and this was largely due to a much more effective and efficient procurement practice and financial management practices, made up of further investment income and unclaimed grants from the mandatory reserve. 90 million was allocated by the discretionary grant committee in the current year for the purposes of discretionary grants, and this was a projected figure because we actually projected to year end in order to ensure that the maximum amount can be allocated for the benefit of the sector. We've also achieved a substantial increase in the number of member companies over the period since inception. And over the next page, you see a graphical representation of that. What we've noticed is that the companies, both participating as well as levy paying companies, have increased by over 100% over the period. And this shows that a large number of companies have been either contributing or moving towards the CHITA and attracting the services and the skills from the development initiatives from CHITA. Thank you very much. I'll hand you back to our CEO.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is our offering from the CHITA. Thank you. Thank you. Any clarities before we go to the third CHITA members? None. We have was your hand up? Okay.
Yeah, there's something that I don't quite understand in your explanation of the page headed annual financial statements and audited results 2008 and 2009. You've made a couple of points. And you were explaining why the 26.3% increase in skills development levy income. And you said that you looked at the reasons and salary increases were between 10 and 12%. Your levy is still 1% of the payroll. So how do we get to 26%? I don't quite understand that. Is there a number I'm missing? Where is that?
Yes. What we were saying is that, look, in the sector itself, 1% being the payroll base and levy, we would have expected that that we would receive an increment in levies in the same region of the payroll increment in the chemical sector. However, we've exceeded that by almost 13%. So we've received a return of 26.3 as opposed to the 12%. And when we measured what was the reasons behind that, we took a sample of the large, medium, and small companies, and what we found is that the companies, although the payroll base or the number of workers was not increasing in many companies, the contributions were increasing largely, meaning either that either there was expansion in the company or there were more employees working in those companies. So that accounts for the additional 13%. And what we interpreted that as, obviously, was that the impact of CHITA in the sector in increasing either the workforce or bringing more unemployed into the workforce, which resulted in a larger that 13% expansion.
Okay, thank you. I think honorable Law or Olive, if you have a follow-up question, then we can deal with that when we're dealing with questions. Now, we are calling upon the ETDP, Ms. Nombulelo Ngesi, the CEO. Where is she? Oh, okay, that side. And the chairperson, Mr. D.T. Naika, where is the chairperson? Okay. So who's giving us a presentation. Is the CEO?
Yes.
Okay. Can you then introduce the rest of the delegation, please?
Thank you very much.
Microphone.
My name is Sesina Mbulelo Ngwase. I'm the CEO of the ETDP CETA. We have a delegation from the ETDP CETA, the chairperson of the board, Dr. Tosia Naika, behind me. Next to me, the deputy chairperson, Ms. Trudy Guma. We have also a board member, Mr. Mike Naidu, behind me. We have Mr. Mike Watkins, the human resource manager. Mr. David Mulambo, the Chief Financial Officer. We also have Dr. Belton Malgas, who's going to be directing the presentation as the Chief Operations Officer. We want to welcome the opportunity to come and present to the Portfolio Committee. Are you ready? Is setting up, we have provided the presentation. Chairperson, we might go a little bit slightly from the other presentations because we tried to follow what was prescribed in the correspondence. That will come and present on our performance, but we must also stick to how are we going to prevent job losses through training initiatives emphasized by the President. And we want to make some kind of emphasis around that as the ETDP CETA. We might not be in a position to give you the entire report because our report was submitted on the 26th of August, and we hope that it has been. So I'll give more of the highlights in terms of what entails with the ETDP CETA. Firstly, as we get to our programs, let me just explain because other CETAs have given the sector profile so that the members understand who we are very clearly. We are a big CETA responsible for anything that pertains to education, training and development. And we normally call ourselves the foundation of education and the mother CETA. We are constituted by a number of organizations and constituencies. Libraries and archives are part of the ETDP CETA. Political parties as employees, research institutions, non-governmental organizations, and community-based organizations. Trade unions fall under the ETDP CETA. Public higher education and private higher education institutions fall under ETDP CETA. Further education and training institutions, private and public, fall under the ETDP CETA. Early childhood development centers, other basic education and training development centers fall under the ETDP CETA. Independent schools, all the departments of education, the 9 provinces and the national. The school governing bodies, those that employ educators out of the governing funds. Private education and training providers in the education and training sector. If you look into that, it's quite a big sector. But it is made up mainly also of the many more small non-governmental organizations and CBOs. When we did our scope and looked into our profile, ETDP CETA makes up of the 6% of the workforce in the country and is responsible for that. In terms of zooming into our performance, we're not going to give much kind of, but we just want to highlight that the programs that we implement as the ETDP CETA are more focused on education. We are responsible for early childhood development. We have done quite a lot of training, especially the pre-grade R training, the 0s to the 5-year-olds. Whilst in the last 2 years, we focused more on grade R. We took that initiative from ASGISA and CIPSA, and we worked closely with the Department of Education and the provincial departments of education through the extended public works program. All the programs of the expanded public works program with the social department and with the health and welfare sector and ETDP sector, we are leading in terms of ensuring that we do have ECD centers and we focus on that. We also implement adult basic education and training. We work with the centers. But our biggest challenge around that is the mechanism of ensuring that adult basic education is not more of schooling, is more of work-based, and make sure that the employers release the workers. We provide assistance to teachers. We are the people that work with the teachers in terms of the postgraduate certificate in education, those that have passed their junior degrees. We assist them and give them bursaries to go to schools. We have worked on the initiative of the underqualified and unqualified teachers, where we have worked on the National Professional Diploma in Education to make sure that all our schools are manned by qualified and competent teachers. And we are working with the departments and we have provided bursaries towards that. The other program is community development because we believe that education is part of the community. We have learnerships which works with youth on community development and work with the local government in terms of making sure that we have community development champions in our communities. We have also the occupationally directed learning, which is looking at facilitation of learning, especially for those that have not been in the teaching, to make sure that learning is something that is institutionalized. Those are some of the programs that we work on that are key. Besides the other programs and skills programs that are in our sector skills plan, on ensuring that we have financial managers, project managers, and we provide that to all other sectors. In terms of our service level agreement with the Department of Labor, like all CETAs, we sign a service level agreement. We commit ourselves to the achievement of certain targets on an annual basis. And I must say that in the last 9 years, we tried to excel in terms of what we're doing because we wanted to embed the issues of quality. The first one is skills development support to national and sectoral growth development. What we do research, we contact our constituencies, we identify scarce and critical skills, we are using various mechanisms of research and methodologies, we compile those into our sector skills plan. And we also use the workplace skills plans to get what are the needs of the different organizations. And we submit that to the Department of Labor. Every year we update that sector skills plan. And then develop a guide of scarce and critical skills, which we submit to the Department of Labor and we also circulate to all our members. What we found out, Chairperson, in the ETD sector that there's quite a shortage of math, science and teachers. That's priority. There's quite going to be a serious shortage of managers and executives and CEOs in the country in the future. There's going to be a quite shortage of ECD practitioners in the future. There's also going to be a shortage of educators for special needs education. Those are some of the scarce and critical skills we have identified for the next 5 years, and we have worked with departments of education and other constituencies to see how best we can deal with those areas. And that we do through our sector skills plan and our scarce and critical skills guidelines. In terms of also our targets with the Department of Labor, we need to ensure that we receive the work-based skills plan and we reimburse the constituencies in terms of the mandatory grants that they have done. We have been able to achieve our targets on large companies, those that employ more than 150 employees, on medium ones. But we do have a challenge on small levy-paying organizations because the nature of the work that they have to do in that, some do submit the work-based skills plan, but they don't claim their mandatory grants, and some don't even submit the WSPs. So that is the only challenge. As I've said, that we're dealing with small organizations. Again, we have been mandated to support the small BEE firms. Within education, we have tried to make sure that at least our focus is on improving the quality of education on our BEE. And we have looked at the small kind of providers for education because we believe that if we expand the provision of education and improve the quality of the small providers, the public, sort of the private providers, will be able to support them. However, we don't have the cooperatives in education at this point in time, and this is what we are going to be looking at in the next strategy, because we're looking at forming education cooperatives, like agricultural kind of cooperatives, but we have supported the BEE firms, and we have exceeded the target that was given to us. In terms of the NSTS, we also given a mandate to look at the at level 1 and 4, and these are the workers. We have exceeded the target of training at workers. However, I must say that we are faced with the challenge where employers are not really releasing their workers, their employers, to attend the classes. The other thing that we have found is the qualification is more school-based qualification, and we have met with the department to make sure that at least we make it an entrepreneurial kind of a qualification, which is about work life. So we had a challenge of the completions on those, because once they are working, we're looking at vertical and upward mobility for people that are in our development program. Another program is to assist workers in terms of the learnerships, in terms of the skills programs, in terms of the apprenticeships. If you look at our report, Chairperson, you can see that all the targets that we have planned to meet, we have exceeded those targets, because we make it clear that at least we have to make sure that we don't deny the people of South Africa the training. Because when we train workers, we want to enhance and improve service delivery and make workers productive and competent in their work. The other target that was assigned to us was to support non-levy paying organizations, non-governmental organizations, community-based organizations, and those we provide them with a training voucher so that we can develop these organizations. We are very small kind of some of the community-based organizations that we're supporting. And through our voucher system, they're able to do the training for their organizations, and they become support structures of the communities in skills development through the initiatives that are given by the ETDPCT. We also focus on unemployed learners, where we work with the host employer so that we can give the skills, because these are the potential workers of the country, and to also reduce the rate of unemployment in the country. We have various learnerships that they get into, like our ECD, they become ECD practitioners, they become ABET practitioners. We do community development. We work with the various institutions and host employers to make sure that at least they do complete. So there's quite a range for the unemployed learners. And you can look at the percentages of our achievements. They are all above 100%. The other area of importance, we are having the internships programs for both the unemployed people and also those that are students that still have to complete their curriculum. We have found that there's a lot of attraction through the internship programs that we're having, which shows that the high rate of unemployment is a critical issue in the country. And we have been able to place quite a number of learners and youth. We worked with youth structures, youth commissions in all the provinces in order to make sure that we place them for internship programs. But also in our undergraduate kind of new internship program, we worked with universities. And we have taken all the student teachers that are not supported by NSFAS, those that are in rural areas, because we discovered that when student teachers have to do practice teaching, especially in rural areas where the schools are not in a close range, some don't go for practice teaching, and they just get ways of getting the reports because of the distance to travel to the schools, because the universities don't support them. So when we worked with the deans of education, they gave us the challenges of the students, and because of that, we need to support student teachers because it is our quest to improve quality of education. And I think that is the area that we have done great strides in ensuring that we provide enough teachers that have the capacity, and we supported them through the internships. We worked with the schools, principals, we worked with the deans, we worked with those teachers, and then we monitored the progress and supported those. The other one was the new venture creation. What we did in 3 years ago, we trained people, about 367 people, on new venture creation. New venture creation is a learnership that offers business skills to unemployed learners, to youth. And every year, we take 100 of those that we train, we register them for business ventures, and make sure that for 12 months, we support them. And up to now, we supported 200 of the 367 in terms of acquiring their own businesses. That is one way of creating employment in the country through the learnerships. That's basically that. The next slide just gives you a synopsis of how we have fared as ETTP CETA in the last 5 years, because we have 5-year targets, but on an annual basis we start. And if one observes that, yes, first year the times become a bit of a challenge, but we have upped our intake of the students, and we have done more than what was required, which is 100%. I won't go to each and every kind of a slide, Chairperson, but that's what I've explained prior. If one goes to the just a summary of our scores that we received in the last 5 years, performance in the last 4 years, yes. After the first NSGS phase, we had to take stock as the ETTP CETA and said that let's put systems in place now, let's change the issues, because phase one is when all the CETAs were gearing to start the skills development. And then we did some internal restructuring in the organization so that we can bring services to the provinces. We are having 3 provincial offices, one in KwaZulu-Natal in Durban, one in the Eastern Cape in East London, one in Limpopo in Bulawayo. But our operations are such that we have provincialized our structure. There are dedicated staff and resources for each and every province. And that was what made us in the first year to concentrate on systems and policies and processes, and making sure that we are a CETA that is geared for quality education and be the feeder to the system of education. Then in 2006 and 2007, we picked up because we focused now on the implementation. And you can see that's how we have moved. And in the last 9 years, we have received unqualified audits. And if you look at our reports, our performance has been that good. But we have worked very closely with the Department of Education, with all our other constituencies, ECD, APET centers, higher education and further education institutions, so that at least we can work as a team. Also, our focus was not only on reaching the targets, but also the transformation agenda of the country of meeting the equity targets. That in whatever we do, 85% of our targets will be people that are black, 54% will be women, 4% people with disabilities. And we have tried to do that. I must say that in this financial year, the recruitment of people with disabilities was slower than last year. It is something that we have picked up as a challenge, because when employers recruit, we make sure that we give them the equity. So that was one of the challenges, Chair, which we have drawn into the attention of everybody every week dealing that. In terms of the highlights, as I've said, that our reports have been unqualified reports all the 9 years. Matters of emphasis, were there some kind of minor matters that the AG raised about our reliance to Department of Education because they're supporting us. We have been attaining the green status from SAQUA. We have assisted quite a number of people and youth. We have worked with all the premiers in the provinces in terms of the provincial development growth and strategies. And we have worked closely. We have created skills forum agendas in all the provinces so that we get closer to all of them. So basically, that gives us our achievements. But I must raise that there are quite a number of challenges that we think that we need to do. The sector, as an education sector, is taking the Millennium Development Goals seriously and the 2015 Goals of Education for All. We want to work closely with the further education and training institutions as centers of excellence in vocational and occupational excellence. We also work with higher education institutions in ensuring that it's not only theory, but work-integrated kind of learning in terms of our constituencies. But also we understand that there's quite a lot that we need to do working with the teachers. We are the ones that championed the teacher summit that was held, and we supported that teacher summit to make sure that we work on the development and quality of the teachers, to make an undertaking that we reduce those out-of-school youth and make sure that there's more provisioning on education and training, especially the post-secondary kind of level. But again, the challenge that we're having, on all the learnership that we're doing, we have been able to achieve completion. So we have been able to make sure that at least they complete, we support them. However, if a learner is out of school, out with the learnership N2F level 4 or 5, the system doesn't allow that learner to go back to formal education. So those are some of the things that we need to grapple with, because we want to make sure that everybody moves on and we adhere to the principles of N2F. And those are the things that we constantly raise with the program that we are running. There are challenges of dropouts, of course, which we have to make sure that we minimize those, because they become a waste. That's basically that on the achievements of the ETTP sector before I get to Section C in terms of how do we assist now in the training lay of schemes, as it was raised in this. But that is mainly what we're doing at this point in time. And I think we feel that we're a sector that has a role in changing forward the quality education system of the country. Can I go to Section B,
please?
Chair, part of what we have been asked is the how do we support the training lay of schemes, and we said we'll package this as part of this. We just want to give a background that at this point in time, we have a sense that the ETD sector, education and training, has not fully felt the impact of the recession. That is the sector, because we still say we need more teachers, we need more of the people that have the skills. But we think that if one employee from any sector is losing a job, there's a serious ripple effect in education, because that child cannot go to school, that family cannot sustain its living, the quality of education is affected, the reduction in the schooling. So there are serious educational implications on job losses, even if the people in education have not yet lost their jobs for now. But we think that job losses can have a detrimental effect in education, seriously. And hence, our board took a decision in August to support the training layoff scheme within our sector and outside our sector. And we had taken some kind of plan. I must say that this came very short to us. We have not yet had our research and the plan. So we have put a short-term, medium, and long-term interventions to address the joblessness as the call from the president. And then we were saying that the signs are beginning to show, especially with the private ECD centers, with the private providers, because they are not supported through the vote budgets at this point in time. So there might be those kind of challenges that we need to look at quickly. And then we have put short-term measures. And then we said we have a revenue of 166 million in the ETDP sector at this point in time. And the board has agreed to do that. And then given the urgency of the matter, we had gone back to look in terms of our funds, because when we receive our funds, they come as we go, because the levy paying system is on a monthly basis, and we can receive the DOE contributions at different times. So we're able to subscribe to say that we can make 30 million available immediately at this point in this financial year from the revenue that we have collected in terms of assisting towards implementation of the training layoff schemes. And then we have envisaged that that training will be for generic and specific workplace kind of the skills in order to deal with the challenges. And it will target those employers that have been identified through the processes that have outlined by Department of Labor and the CCMA. We did our scenario checking that if the current losses are at 267,000 from the source of the information, and if the ETDP sector is having about 6% of the workforce, our scenario is that 16,000 employees will be affected very soon within the ETD sector, even if it's not immediate. And therefore, if we're planning for the 16,000 at a cost of 6,000, because we are running the programs, we are developing the programs, 6,000 will be the minimum kind of tuition fee. We need 96 million to deal with 6% of 267,000 job losses at this point in time. And if that is the case, we'll have to find money from the NSF, which is 360 million, to pay for training allowances using the formulas that have been given to us. However, what we're saying, we have 30 million at this point in time, and in that 30 million, we are ready to support about 5,000 employees that have lost their jobs at a tuition fee of about 6,000. But for us to be able to do that, we need about 112 million from the NSF for 3 months, because the program is going to run for 3 months as it has been put in the concept document. But we said that is the short term now, what we need to do. The long term, we see that education, training and development sector must be championing the research in terms of what kind of skills are going to be in short supply, even across the industries, or collect the information from other sectors that are there. And we have to make sure that at least when we look at the NSDS 3 strategy, the NSDS 3 strategy must look at how do we grow economy of the country through skills development, so that we don't do training for the sake of training. We do training that is focused in terms of employability in future. And as custodians of certain programs, as a sitter with an ETQA at this point in time, assessor, mentoring, coaching, tests, those are some of the skills that are resident with the sitter, and we can be able to work on that and develop those kinds of programs in future and work with our social partners in terms of channeling those kinds of funds. Can I get another slide? We are also saying that employability, a concept of employability, is what we need to look for the future. A single framework that holds the key to how our country can build a workforce that is competent, flexible, and productive, able to move vertically and horizontally in the same or different industries. What we want to say is that if you look at the past in the 60s, production was this thing, but now there is not more because of the technology, production, and everything. Services is the thing which we have to enhance quality of service delivery and no wastage in the service delivery, especially with the public funds. And make sure that when we train employees, we also anticipate the future, because the issue of job security is obsolete these days. So when you train the people, you train them, you educate, you develop, so that they become multitask. They become multi-skilled, so that if there's a shortage of a skill there or there's a job loss here, you are able to move your employees. Hence, we want to emphasize that with our higher education institutions that reside with us, with FET institutions that reside with us, with education within the sector, we can work with partners and make sure that workplace learning is an issue, it's not a luxury. Because through the workplace skills then that we receive, organizations just write things, but they are not really committed. Once they are receiving the 50% of their grant back, we want to get that kind of mandate. We want to make sure that work-integrated learning is very embedded within organizations, and want to look at a high-skilled approach to economic development, because we believe that your productive employees, your skilled employees, they avoid wastage, they work hard, and they increase the economy. So you need both of those things. And that we think that as a CETA, we want to investigate further the concept of employability and workplace learning and work sites and the institutions as sites of learning. And that's what we want to commit to say that we want to work with institutions, want to work with everybody to make sure that education, training, and development attains the quality it desired, if I may pause. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we take a stretch break for 10 minutes? One page. Why don't you do it with the question?
The first CETA is a facet CETA, and I'm going to ask individual specific questions because the general tone is much better than what we had. The page, the two pages headed highlights and challenges are, I think, where some of the questions might come. You explained the difference between the 31,000 learnerships and the 15,000 completions by saying that many are in process and that the dropout rate is low. But then when you turn over the page at the challenges, you see a high dropout rate at tertiary institutions. So that raises a question. If people are falling out of the tertiary institutions all over the show and you're funding the training and the monitoring, then the question is, well, why are they not falling out of your process as well? I mean, they can't be still in your learnership and yet not receiving the training. So maybe there's a misunderstanding there, or otherwise there's a big gap. There may be a pink elephant hiding there. The participation rates, you talk about 83% of the levy payers are claiming their mandatory grants. What's happening to the other 17%? Do they not know that they need to claim? Is the administration of claiming an onerous process full of red tape? I'm somebody who ran two small businesses before, and I never managed to get any of my grants, even though I did fill in all the forms. So I'm just asking that question. I want to know why they're not getting their money. And then, this is a naughty question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. You say a lot of your graduates go into the other CETAs and presumably take up financial positions in the other CETAs. These three are looking quite good, but we have 23 of them. And are your graduates only going into the top performing CETAs? Or have we got some people coming through your system who go into those non-performing CETAs, because there are some that are shocking. I mean, they're in a shocking mess. So that's a naughty question, but maybe you'll be brave enough to tackle it. The cheetah. Sorry, it's just difficult flipping through all of these pages. Your mission and vision and all that is fine. I just want to ask some detailed questions here as well. When you say speciality in surface coatings, is that paint? Where's the lady over there? That paint, right? Okay, and then questions in terms of the detail, if I can just page over here. The learner achievements per province graph that you've got there, it's an unusual graph. Mostly when we get presentations, we see a typical pattern emerging, that you get Gauteng always having the most, and then the Western Cape, and then KwaZulu-Natal third. But the way this graph looks, it's a bit bizarre, because Mpumalanga seems to suddenly have the second largest number, and I assume this is learnerships. If that 708 is in Mpumalanga, that's very unusual. You know, and again, I'm looking at the big elephant. Why is that so unusual? Is it that the labeling I've misunderstood, or what? Because to have the second largest number of learnerships in Mpumalanga is bizarre. Why then none in KZN? Why then none in the Western Cape? That just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And then, in terms of the training layoff scheme, we heard, and this is going to be a question I'm going to ask everybody, we didn't hear anything really about it from Facet, so what's going on there. The cheetah, you say you're awaiting implementation announcement from the Minister of Labour. Why are we waiting? I don't understand why we have to wait. I assume that the program is declared, you've got a budget together, you've got a program, we've got, you know, is there a magic party that's going to be held in October to announce the program by the Minister or what? And why do we need that? Why can't we just get on with it? We heard on Tuesday, and the reason I ask is not because I'm trying to be funny. On Tuesday we were told that some of the CETAs have got a program, have set up the budget, and nobody's requesting the training because, in their view, the construction CETA told us this, in their view, we've missed the boat because the people were already retrenched. You know, I don't know if there's an argument as to whether it's 200, 300, or 400,000 people that have already been retrenched, and the contact details of those people are lost. And those companies have given up long ago, so those people are lost to the retraining process. And then we get an interesting statement in your thing that we're waiting for the minister. You know, so people, 400,000 people have disappeared and we can't find them to retrain them and put them back in the industry, but we're waiting for the minister. That's the problem. I mean, that's a big pink elephant. Over the page, I still don't understand the problem, and I told you in the feedback I'm going to ask it again. The 26.3% increase doesn't make any sense to me. It sounded like what you were saying before the D-rake is that there are no additional companies or very few new companies. Okay, the average salary increase is 10 to 12%, but there's a 13% increase in revenue over and above that. Now, the economy is collapsing, people. We can't have 13% more than the salary increase coming in when the economy is collapsing. It doesn't make any sense to me. But we were told, I think, and maybe I misheard, but it sounded to me like you were saying there were more individual staff, therefore more revenue. Now, I don't buy the argument that your seat is doing so well that you've got like 500,000 additional staff in these companies in your industry. That's impossible. So that leaves us 13% above the salary increases. I don't understand that at all. And unless you've got a very good explanation, that seems very bizarre. Over the page again, we've got annual financial statements and audit results. We've got a graph. And the graph is not a disastrous one because it shows that you're financially in good health. But as we go along the last 4 years, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, the gap between the grants, the FDL grants, and the employer, you know, project expenses and so on is growing. So I may also be reading this incorrectly, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me the income is increasing and the disbursement is not really increasing for the last 4 years as an average. In fact, it may have come down. So you're getting a lot more money in and you're not paying all that much more out. So it looks, according to this graph, like you're developing a big, you know, Swiss bank account somewhere, and maybe you can explain that's not a Swiss bank account to me. We've covered that already. Unclaimed grants. Just wondering why we're getting numbers of unclaimed grants. And then we have at the bottom a substantial increase in member companies. Now, if we don't have additional companies in the industry, is this because you've done a very good marketing exercise that you've now got a lot of the existing companies join your company? Under financial highlights 0809, it says substantial increase in number of member companies. Maybe that explains where that extra 13% comes from. I don't know. Shaking his head, so that's going to get even more impressive when he gives me that answer. Then if I can move to the last one. Lots of paper here. Okay, I just want the education, what is it called, ETDP, to give me that list again, because I didn't have a chance to write it down quickly enough, and it's not in this presentation, of the shortage that we're going to have in certain classes of certain categories of people that are being educated. We know that South Africa is going to be short of something like 81,000 doctors and nurses, which is a large number to make up, and it's going to be difficult to make that up. If you could just give me a list of 5 top categories of shortage, areas of shortage, because I couldn't write it down quickly enough while you were talking, but I think that's important. And then I have a question across all 3 CETAs. You all are achieving these amazing percentages, and that looks great, but of course, and on Tuesday, I mean, they were a disaster, so I'm quite happy that we're achieving these wonderful percentages. But it does beg the question, are the targets not too low? I mean, if you can achieve 250% of the target, my target as a ward councillor in Johannesburg was to attend a certain number of public meetings every year, and I achieved 250% of the target. And I then asked myself the question, well, should I not be attending more meetings? Because I'm achieving such a high amount, it does look a bit bizarre on the report card. And here we have on table 2 achievements on NSDS 2, objective 2, and so on. Number 2.2, by March 2010, skills development in at least 40% of small levy paying firms. That's quite a low target. I know you said that's a problem area and an area where you need to work. I accept that, but 40% is quite low, and the small businesses are where they typically don't get their money. The big firms have got big bureaucracies to come and knock on your door when they want their money. It's the small firms that don't get their money, and often where the needs are greatest for training, but only 40% is the target. I would have thought as a government we should be focusing a little bit more. There's another one, 2.8. At least 50% are expected to successfully complete programs. Again, it's a lowish target, and you know, of course, on the other side, we then achieve 143.2%. You know, but when you look on that page 6, table 2 continued, it said that by March 2009, 3,265 workers had been assisted to enter, and 2,146 completed the programs. You know, and then you have the percentage, 143%. Have been assisted to enter and 188% completed. When you compare the actual number of workers that entered and the actual number that completed, there's 1,000 difference. And that 1,000 represents a third. So a third drop out, according to that. Yet it ends up at 188% success rate. So we throw a party because we achieved 188% success rate. But a third have dropped out, you know. And I can also take a bit and make those figures look really amazing. It's 1,100 people are gone, but we still get to throw a party because we achieved 188%. It doesn't look good. And the same phenomena happens under 4.1, 3,000 on page 8, table 4. On March 2009, 3,514 unemployed people had been assisted to enter. That's 156% of the target, obviously. And 1,369 had completed programs, that's 122%. But when you take to the minus, you end up with 2,200 people who disappeared, who didn't finish, which is two-thirds. Two-thirds bail out of the program, and yet we still get 122% success rate. So, you know, it's just I need more explanation on those figures, or else I think your target is way too low, one of the two, but I'm sure you'll explain that when you get a chance. The question that is more general that comes to mind out of all of this is in terms of the FEC colleges and so on. You know, we've had nurses' colleges, we've had the further education and training colleges and so on, and there was an attempt to shut them all down in a previous dispensation, and now we're hearing rumors that they must be all started again. Pardon my English, but perhaps your comment on that being the education CETA, whether you think that we should be reopening these colleges to help with the training. Perhaps you have a view on that. It's not a detailed question. It's a more general question. Do you think that we should be pushing harder to reopen some of those colleges? The number of nurses being educated in the country is dropping and dropping and dropping, but it's far for a poor person to go to get to a nursing college, to get education, or they have to go to university or somewhere, and it's expensive, it's far from home. Should we not be reopening a lot more of these colleges to educate people like nurses? I assume that that large number there, 1,405%, is just a typo on the document, because that would obviously be a bit ridiculous. Okay, I'm going to stop. Thank you.
Thank you. I just hope that members won't all take 20 minutes. Honorable Nyakemba.
Thank you very much. One would request the Department of Labor to explain the functions of a suit. Well, I think that is important. It's important for the sitters who are here for the future, and it's important for us as members of parliament. Because I don't want to be seen or to mix issues, to take a sitter and compare it to a university. And also to think that sitters are like colleges. You have people who are training, you have classrooms and a number of things. My understanding, obviously, that's why I'm saying it's important that the Department of Labor can explain this in order for the different understanding that you might have, in order to have one understanding as to why CETAs were established in terms of the Skills Development Act. I'm saying this, Chair, because my understanding is that in terms of Chapter 4, Section 16 of the Skills Development Act, that relates to learnerships. Now, the issue of learnership, there's nothing there in that particular section that says, in fact, it's a targeted approach. It's a learner. It's the service provider. And is the employer. Now, obviously, the employer might not necessarily be the sitter. That's my assumption. That's why I want the department to clear this. Secondly, the sitter is not a service provider at the same time. And now in that targeted approach, the sitter is not there. So it's important for the Department of Labor to come to our rescue in this sense. The second point, Chair, is that the issue of the layoff, I raised this Tuesday, I think I must raise it again. It's important for again, Madam Chair, that the department brief us. Because my understanding of the training in relation to the layoffs is not to say, let sitters develop a program to train the retrenched workers who have been retrenched because of the recession. My understanding is an intervention as a result of retrenchments that took place as a result of the recession. And then the president, through NEDLAC, established a task team. A task team that consists of the social partners in NEDLAC. You have government being represented there, And of course, the Department of Labor is part of government that is sitting in that system. You have organized labor, you have organized business to say, how do we stop this massive retrenchment as a result of recession? And then the issue of the training during the time of layoff came as a result of the number of workers who have been already retrenched. So I think it's important also for the department to come in order for us to have a same understanding as to why this layoff, what informed this layoff, where are we? Because my understanding is that the training, in fact, sitters will come to the party after there has been CCMA processes where a particular establishment said, look, my employees, they are moving up and down, so therefore, I am applying in terms of Section 189 for CCMA to facilitate the process of the layoff training. So my understanding is that when now sitters will get in, after there has been a process that has put in place through CCMA facilitation, and of course, that process will come after a company has applied, and then that particular company and a trade union, if there's a trade union existing in that establishment, they will agree on how the process is supposed to look like. I think these are very key matters that I think we need to be clear of. However, Madam Chair, I've got questions. I was raising this inviting the Department of Labor in particular. I think on Tuesday, it was because of time when the Deputy Director General was not allowed to speak on this issue, even on Tuesday. I hope today at least you will have opportunity, Madam Chair. My understanding of what has been raised by, forgive me if I'm pronouncing your institutions incorrectly, but just listen to what I'm trying to say. Facets. I didn't hear you in your presentation talking about what is it that you are trying to do to accommodate people with disability. And then I think that goes also with CHITA. I think this CHITA, Madam Chair, is not the one that is in ETV. I think you also, I didn't hear you saying anything, but I think ETDP, you did mention that yes, it's a challenge, but you are putting something in place in order for you to deal with that. I want your comment, the two sitters in that area. Again, Madam Chair, on facet, I didn't understand clearly. You spoke of 70% of learners, and I think, of course, through learnerships that are absorbed within FACETA sector. That's 70%, and then 30% not within your sector. My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding, you were not necessarily saying it's the 70% that we have absorbed as a CETA. You were saying through your intervention that 70% of those learners have been absorbed within the sector where you assist and facilitate training. Okay. Thank you. The three general questions to all sitters. We once had a public hearing, I think you have heard that, on labor broking on the 25th and 26th of August. I was listening tentatively since Tuesday and today. The involvement of labor brokers in discharging the responsibilities that you have as sitters. Because they claimed to facilitate training and skills development. And I did raise a question there to say, when I look at the section that I referred to earlier, Section 16 and 17 of the Skills Development Act, is the tripartite approach, is the learner, is the employer, and the service provider. One could see how do they feature in. So I think maybe there might be some way of how do they work with you. We are all ears. That's why I'm raising this. The second point, Madam Chair, is the general criticism on sitters. That you are not doing what you're supposed to do. As sitters. I'm expecting you not to speak for individual sitters that you represent today. I want you to look broadly at your functions as sitters in general. And if you can, try to isolate what do you think generates this general criticism on sitters as if there is nothing that they're doing. The last point, sir, is I think I've indicated my understanding of why delay of training. But I think I've invited the department to say something. But I think it's important for you, if you can, as individual sitters, what is your understanding of the role that is expected to you by government as a result of the task team that was put in place by the president? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nyakemba, Honorable Matisha.
No, thanks, Chair. I must say that I'm comforted by the fact that all the sitters have done their best, really. They have raised the bar. And this is an antithesis of what we got from other institutions that operate under the Department of Labor. And our proposal would be to the department that they've got to hasten the work that gets done by other institutions, UIS, etc., etc. Because, like I'm saying, what we see here is totally different. It's an antithesis of what the others are doing. Just to get a clarification, the input that was given, I think ETDP said that, is the lack of cooperation from the employers. If you could just elaborate on that. And to check with the others if we don't have that kind of problem as well. I'm raising this because if there is that problem, they will call upon us this side. They will call upon us to say we need to find a way of dealing with that. Because unless something is done, we'll continue to have problems. And we need to have our people skilled. But next is the issue of tracing the people who are qualified, the graduates in this instance. Again, this was raised, and I think you need to say something in so far as that is concerned. The country has rightly reason to say that we don't have skills in the country. It will be wrong in any way to say that we don't have skills when skills are there and they just vanish. You need to say something, I believe, in so far as that particular point is concerned. And coupled with that is the fact that there are people who, once they are trained, they go into companies to go and work, and those companies close. I mean, I can give you an example with the clothing and textile. Those factories are closing. It's not only there, but in a whole lot of other industries where people do work for 20 years or more, they have that skill and they disappear. Can you say what is it that you do in so far as that is concerned? Mr. Hollis, Honorable Hollis, has raised a number of questions that one wanted to raise, really. And it, of course, will be proper for us to look into that. But apart from that, Chair, I'm quite comforted by the fact that the CETA CSA, these are the challenges we are faced with, but then this is what we are going to do. And when we call on them to, you know, check whether they've gone on to address those particular issues, I hope they'll be able to do that. So it's a question of saying, yes, they've raised the bar, but indeed, we've got to see that they address this particular question and they come back when you, Chair, call upon them and the committee here to say how far they've been able to go. But I'm saying if they can, you know, address these questions that have been raised, that would be better.
I'm looking forward to the sitters to answer the questions. The questions that are directed to all the sitters, and the questions that are directed to the sitters. So we'll start with the pastor.
Chair, thank you very much. I'll endeavour to answer the questions that have been directed specifically to FACET. From the first member, the question around graduates who are going overseas and how do FACET address this. Chair, I think it's important to note that the number of graduates in the profession that we represent, the finance profession, who are going overseas has dropped substantially in the last 18 months. And that's because of the situation and what's happened to world banks and international finance. I think it's also important for the committee to be aware that part of the training program in professional accounting firms is that a number of their graduates are actually encouraged to go overseas on a 2-year secondment. And that is because we are part of the International Accounting Federation, and South African accountants need to be accounting in terms of international standards, particularly because of a lot of our companies have their head offices overseas and then local offices here. So what we tend to find is that there are a number of graduates who do leave our shores, but those same graduates then come back 2-3 years later, and that's very positive for the economy because they bring those new international skills back. So we are aware with that and do work with it, but for graduates who leave of their own free will, there's nothing we can do. To the second member, the first question was with regard to the 31. With regard to graduates who finish university and leave our shores straight away, before they come into the CETA net, we wouldn't know who those graduates are, because we tend to pick the graduates up once they've completed, for example, a BCom degree, and then they enter the firm to do a learnership, 3 years of articles. Now, there are a number of people who leave at the end of university, which means they haven't yet come into the CETA net. And those graduates we can't answer on behalf of, because they're not within our mandate, Madam Chair. The second question was with regard to the high dropout rate at tertiary institutions, which seemed to be clashing with our 31,015. The learners come into the FacetNet once they've completed the BCom. So only once they've completed the BCom and they enter articles in the firm, that's where we're counting the 31. So there's a difference. It was just two different parts of the same wheel. The second question was regard to what about the 17% who don't claim the mandatory grant from FACET. Firstly, we're particularly privileged in our sector that 17% is not predominantly small. Our participation rate and payout to small organisations is we actually pay out 101% of levy we receive from smalls back to smalls. So we're using money from savings on admin, et cetera. And I think it's the nature of the sector that even small accountants are forced to have a certain number of hours of continuous professional education, and they see FACET providing that. There are a number of larger organizations in the FACET sector, predominantly in sectors like stockbroking and management consulting, who have indicated to us that because they, and if I can use a crude term, because they poached their trained people from the accounting profession, they're quite happy not to claim their levy back through the mandatory grant, but for us to use that money in our discretionary pool because they'll pick the skilled person up when they come out of it. So I think it's a slightly different dynamic. The question with regard to why our graduates don't go into some of the other CETAs, I'm going to attempt to answer that. I think we also need to be aware that there is a large shortage of professionally qualified accountants in this country, and it filters through to a large shortage of CFOs in government and public entities. And one of the challenges that we faced with is that because there's such a skill shortage, people tend to go to organizations that pay more money. And the CETAs, from a salary perspective, are not in a position to compete with the private sector. The next FACET-specific question was from a member across the way. What FACET does for people with disabilities is that at least 4% of people who are supported through our development projects, which is the national target, are people with disabilities. So we have a number of blind learners that we've trained, a number of physically disabled learners, and we've also had a number of success stories. One of our young blind learners, and it was on the photo shoot at the end, we picked up, she'd done an economics degree and was unemployed. She went through one of our work readiness programs and joined the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, and she's now a full trader. So we are very conscious of that. On our cash grants, our strategic cash grant and learnership cash grant, we also make available 175% of the funds if somebody was to take on a person with disabilities, because we know there are additional costs in training learners with disabilities. And finally, we've just completed a project where we've developed a disability toolkit for employers to assist them in being able to facilitate taking on people with disabilities, and that's going to be launched within the next month or two. So we are doing some work in that area. The next direct question to FACET was involvement of labour brokers in the sector, and I think because of the nature of the FACET sector, we don't tend to work directly with labour brokers. Because you're not likely to get qualified accountants coming into an organisation through a broker service. However, a lot of our members in our sector, small accounting firms, do perform services, accounting, bookkeeping, tax services for other firms. And if you want to define that as a part of broking, because it would be an outsource agreement, then I think our people work very well with us, because those accounting firms are training young people, they're making sure we've got professionally qualified accountants who can offer a professional service to a lot of small organizations who couldn't necessarily afford to employ their own professionally qualified accountant on a full-time basis. Chair, I think I've covered all the facet-specific questions. If there are any that I've left out, if I could please just be reminded. Thank you.
Thank you. Just the 15,000, just tell me about the 15,000, 12,500, and the 10%. Where is this? This 15,000, is it people who are working place? Did I hear you correct, who are permanent? And then 12.5, is the number of people that we have trained in the last 9 years. Can you just talk to that? Because if you have placed on permanent jobs 15,000. And then we have 12,500 in the last nine years. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you properly. Just explain. I don't understand. Just make me understand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first highlight is with regard to learners on learnerships. So those would be young people who have either finished their qualification, a BCom at university, or a national diploma through one of the universities of technology, and have signed on as official learners on learnerships. The majority of those learners are doing three-year learnerships. And of the 31 people who've entered learnerships, 15,000 people have completed those learnerships, and they're in full-time employment. The majority of those learners are still on those learnerships. So at this point in time, we could have anything. We've got about 13,000 learners who are currently undergoing their learnership. Because of the length of time, they don't come out in one financial year. So that's the 31 and the 15. The development projects with the 16,618 learners, those are people who are not yet on a learnership. So those are currently people who are at university. Some of them have gone through university, they've got BCom degrees, and they can't find employment. So what we do is we put those people through a bridging program to assist those people to get to fill the skills gaps to be able to go on the learnership, which is the first bullet. So it's a feeder process going through the system. And then your lifelong learning, your 41,000, those are people who are in jobs, fully employed, and they are getting trained once they've gone through the work readiness intervention, they've finished a learnership, and now they're employees of the organization. So what we're trying to do at FACET is look at the pipeline of development, how a person develops from when they come out of school to when they become a professional accountant, and to put interventions in place at all of those steps along the pipeline. And those three are speaking to different steps, Madam Chair. I hope that explains it a bit better.
No, I will not ask further questions. I'm not yet clear, but I'm sure when you come back for annual reports, make it a point that I focus on this and understand it. And this 10% people trained last year, what is 10% in terms of people? Where are they in what we're training? In the learnership or in the data? This 10%, where is it?
Sorry, Chair, I don't understand where you're getting the 10. No.
Now, you referred to the demographics in terms of training, and that you have more white males than How does this happen?
Chair, I think it's historic. If we look at the history of the sector, the sector over time has been historically filled with predominantly white men. And what we need to do is we need to work hard at changing that demographic, which FACET does. One thing I didn't mention is that all of our discretionary funding at FACET on the development projects, our strategic cash grant, and our learnership cash grant is only available for black people. We do not fund white people at FACET on learnerships at all. And the purpose of that is to try and change the demographic. All we can do from FACET's point of view is we can fund initiatives to try and correct the balance. The problem is with a 7 to 10 year training period, it is going to take probably longer in our sector than a number of other sectors to get that balance to shift. And if I could just share with you the statistics of one of the professional bodies, about 5 years ago, the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants had 23,000 members, and less than 100 were African black. If we look today, they've got 24,000 members, and just under 2,000 members are African black members. So the profession is changing, but it is going to take at least 10 to 15 years to start seeing dents in that. And all the CETA can do is direct our funding to where it's needed, and hopefully it will change in the longer term.
Answer questions that are directed to all the CETA for FACET.
Madam Chair, yes, I can try. The first member, sir. The question with regard to career guidance at schools and the roles that CETA play. We're involved in a number of interventions as a CETA directly, where we do engage and partner with other organizations that are doing career guidance for schools. And if I can just give you two examples, we work very closely with Sky Bono up in the Newtown precinct in Johannesburg on the work they're doing with school children. And we also work very closely with Career Planet down in the Western Cape. We also have a program where we work in partnership with a number of the professional bodies in FACET sector. We have a large number of professional bodies, SICA, SIPA, ICB, CIMA, ACCA, and all of those professional bodies do good career guidance work in a number of schools. And we also partner with ABASA, which is the Association for the Advancement of Black Accountants, on their school initiatives. So there is some work happening at school level. Obviously, we can never get to all of the schools because there are too many, but we try and get to as many as we possibly can. Even though that's not one of the CETA mandates, career guidance doesn't fall within our mandate, but we believe it's very important to be giving people that information. And you will see in the blue pack that we gave you the little calculator-looking pop-out, which is the kind of thing we would use because we believe it appeals to teenagers. With regard to the dropout rate at universities and how do CETAs absorb people, even though our sector is predominantly focused around graduates, we are aware that there are a number of people who do not successfully get out of universities. And a number of the professional bodies in our sector have alternative career paths to becoming accountants that don't necessarily require university degrees. And we support those professional bodies in a lot of those interventions. In fact, we're running a big project at the moment for about $56 million, where we pick up young people who've dropped out of university and put them through one of our professional body programs, where they write professional body exams to qualify via an alternative route. So we do try and assist people there. The second group of generic questions, the second member who asked FACET specific questions, the first question was regard to the training layoff scheme and FACET's engagement with the training layoff scheme. What we've done at FACET is that The process that we followed in terms of the lifelong learning interventions that we put on, etc., are similar to the kind of interventions that have been proposed in the training layoff scheme. So it's ongoing training for people so that they don't lose their jobs and are reskilled all the time. So those are the kind of interventions that we've had in place for a number of years at FACET, and we are continuing to support those interventions as we go through this difficult time. We have not engaged directly in earmarking a certain amount of funds specifically for the training layoff scheme for two reasons. The first reason is that we have not had any retrenchments in our sector to date, so that there are no firms who've come forward for that assistance, and there have been no CCMA applications that have come through for that. And the second point that's very important from a FACET perspective is that the training layoff scheme also looked at CETAs allocating their unallocated funds into the training layoff scheme window. And at this point in time, FACET does not have any unallocated funds. All of the funds that we have on hand have all been allocated to the interventions that we currently have. So we're using things like our lifelong learning intervention, which is a form of training layoff scheme, and marketing those a lot more to people in our sector. The second question was with regard to target setting. And the reference was made to, for example, SMMEs, 40% participation rates, 50% of learners completing, etc. Those targets are set by the National Skills Development Strategy, and they are five-year targets that set through that engagement process. So they are not specific targets that are set by CETAs on an annual basis. So that might be why we're seeing some of those anomalies. What we also need to be aware of is that over the course of the five-year strategy, some of the definitions of some of those targets get adjusted to allow for changes that are happening in the economy, but the targets don't necessarily get changed, and that's accounting for some of the blips that you're seeing. But I think if you look at a CETA over time, you'll see that any kind of blip in one year tends to straighten out over the years that follow. And moving on, the question with regard to why the CETAs believe that the public criticize CETAs so much, if we could venture in some of our views from a FACET point of view, I think one of the issues, and I think it was highlighted, sir, in your question to the Department of Labor with regard to how does this training layoff scheme work, I think there's a lot of confusion in the public around what the CETA's mandate actually is. I think until we're in a position to actually educate people around what our actual mandate is, and we've seen over the last 10 years that the mandate tends to shift depending on what's happening, and I think that creates a lot of confusion. I think one of the other issues that is of concern, and I think I can speak on behalf of my colleagues here as well, is that what we tend to see in the press are the one or two CETAs that might be struggling at a certain point in time or when something goes wrong, and we very seldom see all of the good news stories, because I think there is a lot of good being done in CETAs, and I don't think we hear about that enough. Then I think the questions from the last member were with regard to the lack of cooperation from employers around training. We don't have that problem in FACET. Our employers are committed to training. It's a training culture, the culture of Article Clerks going through. And what Skills Development has done, Madam Chair, is it's seen that the firms who had a culture of training the Article Clerk through Skills Development and the levy have now extended that training to other people who work in the organisation. So it's definitely been very positive. With regard to the tracking of qualified learners, we do track our learners. I think we're very conscious of that. Any development project that we fund has a requirement that learners must be tracked for at least a year after they've completed that intervention. It is sometimes very difficult to do because young people are very mobile, and particularly in a sector where accountants are moving all the time and in great demand. But we also once again have the assistance of professional bodies when our sector people have to register with their professional body. So there is some ongoing register of those people. And I hope I've addressed all of the general questions, Madam Chair. Thank you.
I think we'll break for lunch, but there's one question. We're breaking at 12 because we anticipate that we should or we might be done at 2 if we continue working. But if we stop at 1 o'clock, we might be here for longer hours. This question will apply to all the sitters. Do you have people or do you have companies that bring students to you or employees who need to be trained on their behalf, for instance? A particular company might want you to take people and train them abroad, or take people and train them abroad. But when they come back, you give them over to them. Do you have such relationship with companies since you are assisting in upgrading the scale? And the second question would be, seeing that there is a shortage of skills in South Africa, that's what we hear every day in the media, and that's how your labor brokers are lambasting the government for not defending their position to remain being labor brokers because they are doing a great job. They are training people, they are placing people, and we have sitters of government that are supposed to be doing that job. Just tell us, how would you, as sitters who are entrusted with that responsibility, respond with the good work that you are doing? You see, we are, as ANC or as a ruling party, we are looking at this institution of government with critical eye. Not because we have an attitude, but because we want to see if the delivery that we are expecting or the people of this country are expecting from the government is taking the right direction. You will not easily find us applauding. Yes, we'll say it's good, but you must listen, we must weigh what the people are saying outside, because you know there's a lot of criticism and concerns about all the sitters. And I don't want to talk about these speculations as to why there's a thinking that maybe you might perform differently if you are located in a certain corner. Just explain to us, how does that happen? From the people that we have seen on Tuesday, they all sing the same story. We have trained so much, thousands of people who are qualified, that you have trained, you have produced a number of people in different spheres. But we are told that people are leaving South Africa because some of them, they want to get skills somewhere else. Where are these people? Tell us, where is the gap? What happens? So I will only allow the lady, because she's already on the floor. And then other sitters will answer the questions later on. And that question that I've asked, the first question that I asked, I want it to be answered. Over to you.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. If I could try and address your first question with regard to employers who are looking to us with assist with learners who are training overseas. We have not had that request from employers in the FACET sector. As I said in answer to one of the
general, madam, overseas and local.
Yes. I think what we're looking at is a number of employers have addressed in the FACET sector the important need of people being continuously upskilled and reskilled in the FACET sector. And we have that all the time. And that's the 41,000 current employees that we've trained. So we run an ongoing, our lifelong learning program is 9 to 10 events a year that run in up to 40 cities in South Africa. So right down to places like the Aar, Springbok, Bethel, etc. And the kind of thing we'll do, for example, is an annual budget and tax update. So after the finance minister's read his budget, we would go around upskilling people in the implications on tax returns they need to do. So those kind of programs we're doing on a continuous basis. And those are the employers' needs that have come to us for what the employees need. With regard to the question on...
So they come to you to assist in upskilling their workers?
Correct.
They are workers.
That's right.
So you are doing it on behalf of them.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yes. So we do that on behalf of the employer. With regard to labour brokers, as I mentioned earlier, we don't have labour brokers in the FACET sector who place people in positions. It's not the nature of the sector, and I don't think it would ever be the nature of the sector. And one of the main reasons for that would also be in order to train professional people in an environment, the company that you're training at has to be a registered training office. So the company has to be accredited and approved to be able to train young people. And that also ensures our quality of training. So labor brokers wouldn't qualify to be registered training officers and then place young people somewhere else. So the labour broker position is not something that affects the sector that we look after, Madam Chair.
Yeah, I will pass, but my question, I think the first question you have answered, the second question was, the labour brokers who came in front of us have boasted that they have trained. They are, when you ask them why we should retain you, they claim that we are trained. We skill these people. We take them from nowhere, we give them skills, and we place them, we give them jobs. Now, I am saying the seekers that are entrusted by the government with that responsibility, where are they? Where is the gap? How do you answer? Where is the gap? Because all of you come here and say, we have trained so much. Yet you hear on the other side that there is skills problem in South Africa. We know it's not, some of you have been here for 8, 9 years, but where are these numbers that you have trained are huge. Where is the gap? That's what I want you to answer. I don't want you to answer whether you work with labor brokers. I just, that's the question that I want. I will not give the other sitters. When we come back, we'll take the second sitter. So in answering your questions, please assist us. Why would it be the labor brokers who are doing, labor brokers who have no finances to do that, and you have finances that are entrusted to you by the government to do that? Where is the gap? So can we break for lunch? Lunch is ready. We'll, it's now 10 past, no? Is it a point of order?
I just wanted to find out whether, or rather make a suggestion. If we perhaps couldn't just continue, and when we're done, and then we can have lunch. It's a proposal I'm asking.
But it will be called lunch. No, we'll be done. It'll take 20 minutes, and we're done at lunch, so that we can go. We'll be done. Everything relies on you, the members. You are the drivers of this ship. So let's take 20 minutes and come back. Please. In this case. I'm sure it's what I was asking, Gucci. Where is the claim? And we know that it's you who should be doing this work for the government. And you come here and also tell us that you have trained so much. Now, who is training for you? How many people are there? How many trainers do you have in this city who are doing this job for you? So, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just start off with a couple of questions asked by the answers asked by the honorary members. The question on the government. Or the governance issue on the board assessment. Just to confirm from our side, we've got an assessment process at board level. Also, board level assessing committees of the board, and then also specifically committees also assessing further down. In this case of relevance is an audit committee, for instance, assessing the internal auditors. So we've got our assessment functions in place from a governance perspective. The question also that was raised regarding the provincial breakdown of learners, Mpumalanga being the highest. The reason being that our biggest skill-paying company is in that region. Levy-paying company is within that region. And also that further complements that pattern is the fact that they've got a corporate social investment program that also functions very strongly or focusing very strongly on unemployed. And you'll see now learner distribution. Unemployed is quite a large percentage of our learnership participation within the CETA. The training layoff scheme question that was asked, why we are waiting for an announcement, and just want to just correct in terms of you created any perception. We are not waiting. Basically, what we are doing now with the CCMA and the National Skills Fund and the Department of Labor is the alignment just of our operational processes. The mandate has been given by our governing board, money has been ring-fenced, and it's just now within this next couple of days to finalize with the other players the operational alignment. And at our last meeting that we had with all these parties on the operational alignment, there was a communication from DOL that there will be some announcement also from the minister. We recognize it was done by the president and by Minister Patel. But it's just in terms of the operational implementing of it. So we're ready. I didn't want to leave the impression that we're waiting for something to happen and then we'll start. Then the question on that was asked on disability. Disability in the chemical industry is a challenge. If you dissect the various occupational groupings, you'll find within the support services, support occupational groupings, disability are represented. But it is a problem in the core business side of the chemical operations, specifically for health and safety reasons. Example, for instance, in the emergency evacuation procedure, how you deal with that operational reality around disability. But the problem is recognized. If you look at our service level agreement in our annual report with the Department of Labor, you'll notice that we've achieved our targets that we set ourselves in terms of disabled people partaking in learning programs. But we need to accelerate. We need to focus more, have focused disability programs, I think, to take on this challenge of equitable representativity, and we're looking at also allocation of discretionary grant for certain corporate projects within the chemical industry to address that issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll proceed with the financial responses.
Thank you. I'll go quickly through the major ones. If I forget anything, please remind me. The first question on the 26% increase, very interesting. The issue here, and firstly I want to highlight it by going back to the presentation that we did. And looking at the last page, just before the thank you, there's a graphical analysis there of the registered and levy-paying companies. Now, the increase is related to the two financial years, 2008 and 2009. If you look at those years, you will notice that in terms of the levy-paying companies, there's absolutely no increase at all. It's static. And the impact is, therefore, we go back to the payroll base and we ask the question, what is included in this gross remuneration in this total payroll? And the definition includes all remuneration, including fixed-term contractors, including temps, but excluding labor brokers and independent contractors. So that tells you that the additional 13% increase that came about when you look at the companies is actually increase in the actual workforce. It's not as attributed to things like labor brokers or independent contractors, but actual employees. Right. Now, that taking that into account with the economic downturn, yes, I agree, it is phenomenal, and it is something that was totally unexpected. But to us, it is important because it is showing our impact over the financial period. The second question around... I think I've answered the increase of 13 and the 26%. The gap in the project expenses, the question was around, if I understood correctly, in terms of the graphical analysis of the SDL income and the project expenses, against that there were major gaps or there wasn't a fixed trend. Now, There's two very, very good reasons for that. The first one is obviously the timing of the training cycles. And this timing may vary from year to year. Now if you look at over the 9-year period, you'll notice that the gap in those income and project expenses over the first 5 years was very steady, and there was a trend along that period. In the second NSDS cycle, the gap seemed to widen quite a bit. That's from 2005 up to 2009. Oh, sorry, it doesn't have a number, but it's the graph around the SDL income and the project expenses. No, that's not. It's the detailed graph that shows all the SDL income in grants against the versus the project grant and project expenses. It's 5 pages from the back. Okay. As you can see, yes, I agree the trend is not so stable from 2005 to 2009. The one reason being obviously the timing of those training cycles, and the second reason is During the NSDS2, or the second phase, from 2005 to 2009, there was a much more greater focus on the apprenticeship and the artisan training, which came back and from the old Manpower Training Act. And what happened during the apprentice and the scheme, we find that people are trained, or the learners go over a period of a three-year program in the chemical industry, rather than the one-year traditional learnership program. And that results in funds being committed over a much longer period. So funds being committed over 3 years, resulting in that bigger gap, but these funds are committed and will be paid out once the delivery and those milestones have been achieved. I think the last question, if I'm correct, was around the substantial increase in member companies. And I think this question was also highlighted in relation to the question around the 26% increase. But these two don't relate, because the substantial increase of member companies that we referred to was actually the substantial increase from the period 2001 up to 2009. It wasn't just for the annual, for that 2008-2009 year. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will proceed to the general questions. And the first question that relates to the CHITA is on the career guidance. I'll answer that one. We have a number of programs that address this issue in terms of outreach to schools. We had the SASTA program. SASTA is the South African Agency for Science and Technology Advancement. It's a business unit of the National Research Foundation, which is one of our science councils. We had them as our service provider to expose young children and their teachers to the chemical industry sector. That's one of the interventions. And another one is the Math and Science project that I referred to in my presentation, the one that tries to get quality young people from math and science, the trailblazers in math and science that was piloted in the Northwest. It is continuing, and the board has approved it to continue as one of the CHITA strategic projects to try and deal with this issue of the death of, if I may say, good results in math and science. And one of the activities that we participate in, it may be a marketing activity, however, we try to look at regional activities along issues of exhibitions at open days and all those to try and attract young people. But also we have a project, the Skills Matrix. It's a career pathing project, and it actually helps children to understand the different career options that they have in the chemical industry. But what we've also done in dealing with all these in general, we also link up with already existing programs in the country, because our board cautioned us that we must not reinvent the wheel. There are many, many interventions out there. One intervention, as an example, is the Sebenza.net website, the Cyborg Discovery Center, which is actually a very interactive program where you can click in and actually have a chemical engineer speaking to you, a video clip of 2 minutes on site, which actually says, what is this, what do you require, and so on. So those are some of the interventions. Sebenza.net. In terms of tracking qualified people and whether we track qualified people that have been trained. An example that the CHITA can give is indeed we have started tracking them. An example is the Women in Oil and Petroleum leadership program, where the employers, some of the employers in the petroleum industry, approach the CHITA to train their employees. And I think it addresses the question that Madam asked also, Madam Chair, to train their top-notch employees. We have done that. The program is in its third year. Our training partner is the Vets Business School. We had to develop the curriculum with the Vets Business School, but the partner company comes through SAPIA, which is the South African Petroleum Industry Association.
So in the first year we trained 50, and then the following year we had 47. So we have tracked them, we have conducted an impact study, and in fact, companies have to commit that we will follow them up to see upward mobility of these employees, and there's a carrot and a stick approach there, and companies are really coming to the party because we also use their HR team sector in terms of intervening, because not only the hardcore scientists are involved there, we also have the involvement of the HR manager to assist them so that when these people are trained, they are party to the training. So that's one intervention. And then we also have the OGCM project, which is the oil, gas, chemical manufacturers. We have a number of chemical companies there which have come up into a partnership on training artisans, which is it's in its second phase. The first phase produced 1,000 artisans at NQF level 2, and then we are actually in phase 2, NQF 3 and 4. We have then 1286 completing, ending 2010. The first phase is subject to funding by the National Space Fund if we get the, it's a 1,000, the target. And then in terms of the employer participation, we don't have a problem of employer participation in the chemical industry. However, an area of improvement is the workplace learning part of the whole training. As for the public criticism of CETAs, we really think in the CETA that there is confusion about the mandate of the CETA, and also there is a paintbrush approach towards CETAs. And one CETA does one thing, the paint covers you all. And I think there's a lot of noise around financial reserves. Yes, indeed, there might be financial reserves, but I think sometimes the monies are committed. Like for a 3-year period, like the CFO explained, that these are committed funds, but when the media picks it up sometimes, they say all of them have big reserves. I must say that maybe on the side of CETAs also, we have not really communicated our successes in a more strong way. Probably that's where we need the support of the National Skills Authority. Maybe we have indicated this on the impact that the CETAs have had on training in this country. Maybe that will kill the public perception, the negativity around the CETAs. And then in terms of the labor brokers,
yes, I think it's also the same manner in which Fawcett answered, is that our engagement is coming in terms of learning is coming through accredited training providers. We have a learner that will come forward for training, and he will sign a learnership agreement, and that training will be facilitated through accredited training provider. We take the point of Madam Chair that we can provide that breakup in terms of how many training providers each CETA, specifically us, and what type of training they provide. But those providers are accredited against a certain standard, against a certain qualification, and we train according to that. But there's no provision from them in terms of putting labor down into CETA to do work. It's, they've got their own capacity, and they just deliver training to us.
Thank you, members from CETA. Now, the questions that have been answered, general questions, I don't think we should all go to them unless the members have specific questions that they need to be answered. The general ones, or on the general ones that they ask. But it's clear from the two responses, Sheet and Facet, that you don't have trainers. This training is done by somebody else that you don't know. of course, you look at the requirement. If that person is accredited to do it, if I will be accredited, I'll come to you, I'll get the job. That's what I want. Now, do you want to say something? Because I want to give okay.
Having listened to what you people said, do you see young children, especially those in previously disadvantaged areas, so-called marginalized ones, being interested in the chemical industry? And if you do, from what age groups?
I don't think the children are interested in the chemical industry because the teacher alone cannot claim credit for interesting them. You know, science education projects, their impact, you apportion success to various sectors. Look at the science center industry. They have a contribution to make. CITAS has a contribution to make. And we also have, for instance, programs run by the National Department of Science and Technology. Those are the interventions for this. For instance, we target generally children from middle schools, you know, upwards, who already have a sense, for instance, of what they may want to do in the future, and we expose them to those programs. So we as a CITA also target already existing government programs, that, like the National Science Week, which is an intervention by DST, which seeks to increase the pool of young scientists. You look at Expo for Young Scientists, it also does that. You look at the Pan-African Maths Olympiad, various interventions. That is why the board decided that we need to look across vertically and laterally and begin to integrate as the NSDS draws to a close, NSDS2, to begin to say what impact are we making in terms of partnerships with those already successful interventions. So indeed, yes, the children from middle school upwards are sort of sensitized through public understanding of science programs and through these career guidance programs targeted at math and science.
ETDP. Thank you, Chairperson. I will try and be brief and not repeat some of the issues that have been raised. My colleagues will have said I must have go through, and then they will add where I have not given sufficient kind of a response. Just the first one on career guidance. I think that was the very critical kind of question about career guidance. And I want to say that given the change in the subjects within the schooling, there is no subject now that is called career guidance or vocational guidance. And the issue of where you bring in role models in the schools is no longer happening in many schools like it has been happening in the past. And I think that's one issue we look at. ETDP took an initiative since last year to have IMBIZOs in all provinces, especially rural areas. This is outside our target from Department of Labor. And we developed, I'll leave it with the Honorable, the career guidance for learners. We, in February, went to Kwadlangezwa, Peter Maritzburg. We went to Limpopo. We went to Eastern Cape, the Eastern Pondoland, Kutsolo. We are targeting Mpumalanga this month in Gauteng. In all the 9 provinces, we are holding IMBIZOs with a number of learners in rural schools. We are telling them about career guidance and how. And we are not only focusing on ETDP CETA. If you look at this, we have provided the list of universities because we are preparing them for the future. We look at grade 10, 11, 12. Because at times grade 12, they are already there. So as they choose their subject careers. So this is the booklet that was given to all of the learners and to all of those. It gives the list of universities, how to apply, how to get NSFAS, all the CETAs, how to get assistance. And I must say that it has helped a lot. We're getting more requests and more requests. So we've taken upon ourselves. And now because we partner with the Department of Education on the Quality Learning and Teaching Forum, each time there's a meeting, we also distribute our career guidance learners and we improve it. But I think it's something that we are committed to doing outside the targets that we're having. Around the issue of those learners, 16 to 24, that do not make full grade, there's a big challenge if you look in terms of the pass rate. When you get to grade 10, there's a drop from those that were there. And I think there's been a debate in terms of where do they get to, these learners, because up to grade 12, they don't get through the grade 12 because we want to increase the pass marks. That is something that we have not been able to work on it as a SETA in terms of where do these learners. But the challenge is, if you trace learners from grade 1 to grade 9, 10 to 12 and to university, a lot of learners don't reach and they are missing kind of a generation. We discussed in terms of our sector skills plan, how to make sure that we get all these learners and where they are so that they can be channeled within the post-secondary schooling program that is coming. But I think that's something we want also to engage, because we are responsible for the sector skills plan and tracing those kind of learners, because you can't have learners that are missing. I think that is a critical issue that I want us to say that we'll look at it, but we have engaged and tried to understand what is the problem. But the biggest challenge is the retention kind of rates, even at grade 12 level. If you look at those that get to university access endorsement and those that are retaining, then parts of those that do not meet the requirements, they take our learnerships program. Now, after they have taken our learnership program, the issue that I've raised was that once you take a learnership program, which is N12 level 4, equivalent to matric, it doesn't lead you to university entrance, kind of, even if you want to do, let's say, is it whatever program, you go there. Hence, I was saying that with the new kind of the Skills Development Act amended, we need to look at the articulation of the credits in terms of, if you have done a learnership, can you be accredited by the High Education Quality Committee from a SETA, so that at least the seamless move. And I think those are systemic problems that we need to get, so that we bring in youth that has been out of school back to formal kind of at the workplace. In fact, those are the challenges that we said the NSDS 3 must look at. The Quality Council of Trades Occupations, the High Education Quality Council, and UMALOSI, those are the things that needs to look at the articulation so that there is movement of learners in the system in and out. The other question that was raised to the ETDP sector is around the priority skills. I'll also provide you with the draft that we have, the document, but we're having 2010-11, which is going to be out very soon. This is 2009 and 10, our SCAF. Every year, we update our critical and SCAF skills. We said finance managers, mathematics teachers, grade 4 to 9, mathematics teachers. But if you look at this, the change in the curriculum requires a change in terms of the new skills all the time. And if you look at the challenges that we're having, whilst you are having about 400,000 teachers, if I'm talking about teachers in schooling, all of those teachers need new skills within the new curriculum, whilst others you need to upgrade even their qualifications. So the need continues to be there, and to make sure that you update that, we'll provide that. But what is also critical is that we don't have workplace assessors. We don't have workplace kind of trainers, those that are sitting in the organizations to continue supporting the workers within the workplace. Because we're talking about training in schools, that is your schools, your FETs, but also workplaces must decide for training and development all the time. Which leads me to the question of the employers. Not supporting. What we're saying about the employers, we work with the employers. But when we train employers, we expect that within the basic conditions of employment, act of 8 hours, there's time off to learn. Now, employers are finding it difficult to say, okay, we'll release you from 9 to 12 to attend your ABET classes. Because it doesn't work now to have night schools. Workers come from home, they're retired. If they have to go to a night school 6 to 9, then they're not able to make it, and that's why our night schools have not been very efficient. All we're saying that there needs to be time off to learn so that the employers recognize that in all their institutions. But also other thing, Chairperson, is that our system of education, schools, FETs, universities, 3 o'clock it's closed. Saturday it's closed. given the need, we can't have such a system. We need to have open kind of institutions if we want to improve the quality of teaching. Mm-hmm. And shifts in terms of that, and dedicated people to come in at different kinds of shifts, because the need is huge. The question you raise, you say that we are training thousands. I must say it's a drop in the ocean, because the skills become obsolete every day with the replacement of technology. The skill that we had yesterday might be different from tomorrow, and you have to keep on training the people. But you must have flexible institutions. You must have people that are committed and dedicated. You must have work ethics. But that's something that we all need to work through, because you can't find an ethics institution with all the resources. Saturday, there's nothing that is happening. It's closed, all the gates. It's a waste of time and resources. Maybe there's a need of putting more people that are trainers that will go during those kind of the times. And again, in terms of the numbers, we're chasing numbers, Chairperson, I must be honest with you. We're chasing the numbers because we have targets. If I am given a target of 1,000, I must chase 1,000. But we need now in NSCS 3 to balance the number with the quality so that I can be able to follow the learner and give the support system that the learner is needing and the provider at that point in time. Because for me to reach the numbers you have said, I agree with you, the numbers have been set there are low because those are the targets. Then we report on the numbers that we have done above the targets. We need to raise the thresholds. Again, in terms of those that complete, we report on the 50% of those. But the stages at which learners come out of the system are very different. Because if you take a learnership of 1 year and you have level 4, some complete within that 1 year, some complete 1.5 years, they fail one or two modules, some. So at the end of the day, you don't get a neat kind of those that have completed. Hence, we need to emphasize quality that what do you do in terms of those that are still in the process, are still struggling within the learning system. So I'm saying that we are training, but I think we should focus on the depth of the training, the quality of the training. Even if you get out of 100, 10 good kind of people that you say, these are the financial managers that we have produced, the kind of the strategy that we are having at this point in time is pushing the numbers. And now we have to couple that with the quality indicators, the impact, the socio-economic kind of impact. Because I always say that what gets measured gets done. If I'm measured on the impact, I'll work on the impact. If I'm measured on the numbers, I'll work on the numbers. But I think as a teacher, we need to work into that kind of an issue. The other issue that was raised was the companies that close, they employ people, skilled people, they get closed. What do we do with those? How we work mostly with the employers, those that are in our sectors. And then they give us the list of the people that we need to do the training. And then we do that kind of training. But with companies that are closed, we consider those people as unemployed people. So we train them as unemployed. And again, on unemployed people, our focus has been more on the youth, that is the young people. Those people that are old, I think we have not really looked into that. But through the internships and the reskilling of the unemployed people, even if they were previously employed, but also there are older people that have been retrenched and they become unemployed. I think that's another issue that we need to do, how best we can utilize the skills. And I think they can form part of the training layer of skills. We do not have any learners that have been abroad or on any exchange program. But EDDP Theatre for the first time took an international trip. We have never done that before. But we did that on the basis of studying the further education and training system of United Kingdom and how their FET institutions work. They provide a range of programs and they don't close on Saturdays because their programs, we ask their learners start from age of 16 years up to 85, which means that is an adult person. which means they're looking at lifelong learning. They're also looking at offenders, how to bring them to the system. So there is a wide range of the FET kind of programs that we have learned more and want to implement and introduce in terms of the system itself. In terms of the trainers, we do have the trainers. We know exactly that we do not have the database of our trainers. What we do as CITAS, we do accredit our own kind of training providers through the regulations of SAQA at the time when we do our accreditation, and then we give them the status of being accredited, and we utilize them. But we also utilize the training providers from other CITAS after we have looked at their programs. However, I should say that at times, the quality at that training site is difficult to monitor as a CITA. As it was rightly put so that a learnership is a tripartite. It's a service provider, it's an employer, it's a learner. But what the CITA does is to facilitate that process. So we make sure that we facilitate the providers accredited, the learners are recruited, and they're right. And the employers, they host in order to provide workplace learning, and we monitor the process. But at times, what happens at that site during that time, that's where the challenge is. And we keep on monitoring what is happening. On labor brokers, we do not use labor brokers as a CITA, but I think, Chairperson, the whole issue should be looked in terms of what is it that the CITAs are contracting out? What is it that they are doing? Because we may use other terms like not labor brokers. But as a ETDP CITA, we use training providers that we do accredit. And in terms of our own staffing, we have our own staffing kind of. We use our databases and also those people that are unemployed. There's a pool of unemployed graduates, SAGDA. We worked with them when we need even contract kind of employers. So we don't, but I must say that there are issues that we need to look into in terms of what is it that we're contracting out. For instance, there are things that we can be able to share as CITAs, like internal auditing where we don't have, financial kind of services that many CITAs are using. But the whole concept of labor broking might be used differently in other terms by many other CITAs. I think that's another thing that we need to check. But the biggest challenge is the training for the sake of training, not looking at the gap between the supply and the demand in the labor market, not fitting into that kind of a gap. And then the other issue is the placement problems. Because if we train people as the CITAs, we do not have the leverage of getting them employed. So the supply and demand, the labor market, must make sure that when there's a supply or when there's a demand, there's a supply. So we need to close that gap. And we want to say that the NSDS3 must look in terms of how do we close the gap between the supply and the demand. Because we'll continue meeting our targets, but we may be training people in the wrong skills that are not required by the market at the end of the day. Hence, our sector skills blends must be considered when NSDS3 is done, in addition to the national priorities of the government. And I think we can be able to alleviate the challenges of unemployment in the country. On the generic kind of questions, I normally say to people, when one sitter sneezes, all the other sitters get the swine flu. And then they laugh to that. But I think also it's upon ourselves. We need to also work together as institutors, because at some point we do compete with one another. We do try and show off. It's time that we support one another. We look at other, because we have one common goal and one cause at the end of the day. But there is a misunderstanding of the roles of the teachers. And if you look at the mandate, as Cheryl has said, that it's keep on changing. We used to do more of learnerships. Then there was a challenge of artisans and apprenticeships. Then the CITAs had to run after that. Then employers used to take students that need to do workplace experience or experiential learning. Now, workers, employers refused to do that. CITAs had to follow that. Now, there are no bursaries. We have to provide the bursaries. I'm just saying to, at some point, if we can, CETAs be having a clear, focused, dedicated, and proper quantitative and qualitative measures, you'll be able to see the impact. And those that are not performing, they can be cut out of the system. I want to pause, Chair Aronga.
Okay.
He has been making a lot of yeah-yes today.
I think we have come to the the DG. Sorry, the deputy chief. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the question, you might have half answered it, but I just wanted to address the lady over there. The FET colleges and the nurses' colleges, you know, we've got an 81,000 shortage of doctors and nurses in South Africa, and we don't know where we're going to get them from. Should we be opening those colleges again? That was the one that wasn't answered. And the one that was the quick follow-up was to the cheetah, the growth in the numbers of staff. Do you know which of the five chambers is experiencing the most growth? Can you tell me?
On the colleges.
Wait, ma'am. Nyakemba.
I'm Nyakemba. You crossed the floor. No, I'm joking. I think I just wanted to come in, Madam Chair, before the DDG comes in to clarify certain things. Actually, to further clarify what CETAs has already stated in relation to their mandate and other matters. The challenge is that employers like a shortcut in making bucks very quick, in getting grants. Because when you look at the learnership versus apprenticeship, learnership is 1 year, and then apprenticeship is 3 or more years. Meaning that employers will not be able to claim any of the grants that are imposed to them as a result of embarking any training program. So the point that was raised by ETDP, I think it's a point to say, Department, you are here. Parliament, you are here. And as portfolio committee, you have met other sectors, you are still going to meet other sectors. This is a point that needs to be canvassed in going forward, in saying how do we deal with the competition among sectors. Because sectors now, they tend to become political parties. Like when you go to elections, each political party will say, this is a very good manifesto. And the other one will say, this is a very good manifesto, not that one, and all those things. So I'm saying, it's a very key point that us as parties in this political committee, we need to find a way, how do we deal with that issue? And how do we emphasize the need of apprenticeship more than the learnership, because learnership is a very quick way of making money. The second point, Madam Chair, is that yes, they are going ETDP is going to respond on the issue of nurses' college, teachers' college, and all the like. But Yes, it's a relevant sitter. But I think the some of the issues we need to politicize them. Politicize them in the sense that in the manifesto of the African National Congress, I'm expecting parties in parliament to ask us as the ANC to say, in your manifesto, you said, you will open nurses' colleges when a need arises, and teachers' colleges when a need arises. When are you going to do that as the governing party? But I'm not saying that the member of the state mustn't respond to that. It's a question that has been directed to them. But the point I'm raising is in a way, a political question which relates to what parties were saying towards the 22nd April general elections. I wanted to raise that point. I'm not, honorable law, say what the manifesto of the ANC says, but I'm talking to the questions that have been raised. And I think all of us, we have to assist each other in that. The last point shared is that, which I think is very key also, is one point that we need to take it forward. The issue of in this tripartite approach, where the sitters are not actually directly doing the training, but is done by a service provider at a particular place which is not in the which is not the property of the sitter. How then do we look at monitoring that process? I think it's key that's one of the points that I think as politicians we need to take that and move forward. And I think linked to that, Madam Chair, is a point that was raised by Fassett earlier, the uncertainty in a way. Sorry if that is not what you meant, of the sitters being moved from the Department of Labor to higher education and training. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you raised that as one of the challenges. I think we don't have to panic. Because for me, if then, if you were panicking, of course, good. Even if you're not panicking, I think I must make the point. In all these things, there is a section, I can't remember whether it's section 59 or 79 or 39 of the Constitution, where the president has a right of changing the functions and giving functions to another person. Same applies to provincial legislature. Premiers also have that right. But I think the issue that we need to look at in such processes is how the transition is supposed to be managed. Mm-hmm. That becomes a very key issue. Now, that means how do we, as Parliament, manage the transition working together with the Department of Higher Education and Training at the political level and at the administration level, so in order that the transition becomes very smooth, and what will be the relationship in moving forward between these two departments? Because in a way, the issue of workplace skills plan won't disappear. It will always be there. And now, the issues of the agreement in terms of the learnerships, apprenticeship, and all those things, they will always be there. They will be linked with working conditions at the same time, which is the competence of the Department of Labor. So I say, today's briefing raised a number of issues that both the sitters and ourselves need to take care of. Thanks, sir.
I think I must give the opportunity to the teacher because even the clarity that you are seeking, you will be in a position to give answers to. Over to you, Deputy DG. You have facilitated that position now to the new DG. You are the DG, Deputy DG. Over to you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I'll touch the four areas. The role of, that is the career guidance and employment services, just as the first one, the CTAS, the transitional process, and the training layoff as broad areas. Just briefly, I think the question around career guidance and placement and the Act itself, this is the one area that with the repeal of the Career Guidance and Placement Act, that section was incorporated in the Skills Development Act as it currently exists. Now, the Department of Labor is governed by a number of conventions that we are supposed to adhere to that were adopted by the ILO. Although South Africa has not ratified a number of them, we are a key player in the ILO. And I think in the legislative program that we outlined, we indicated that with the separation of the, that is with the Transfer of Skills Development Act, there was an agreement with the Ministry of Education to retain employment services functions within the skills development, within the Department of Labor. Now, what we are now having is a situation of an act sitting between the two ministers. The proclamation by the president was published last week, that notice to give effect to the transfer from the 1st of November is now out. It is official. So what we have to do as part of the legislative program, which we presented to the Labor Portfolio Committee, Mr. Kettledas, I think, made this point, is the development of an Employment Services Act that will, amongst others, facilitate the, that is, the transition of young people from school to work, the re-entry of people into employment, that is, after retrenchment, rehabilitation as part of occupational injuries, and so on, redeployment, the migration of workers within the country and within the region, and the reintegration of people with disability and those in rural areas, because the ILO convention requires that we should regulate those aspects. And that is what that bill is going to talk to. And we are working on that, and it will come in as part of our bills that the Labor Portfolio Committee will consider as part of the amendment to the Skills Development Act, so that you don't have an act serving in the sitting in two ministries. Just briefly on the role of CTAS, Chairperson, I think I will agree with the sentiments of the that were expressed by a number of CEOs, including board members of CTAS. The challenge that we have always faced, and I wish that this thing could be extended to institutions of higher learning and FETs, is that where a government comes up with its five-year plan and they would want departments to realign the resources and all that, CTAS were not spared, and I think that is a good thing. And where we, I think it should be extended is all institutions to then come in, providers, universities, and so on, to be asked this critical question, not necessarily discarding other learning areas, but to say, given the problems that we have and what we want to achieve in the next 5 years, what becomes your contribution in the process? Because that is what has been challenging CTAS, and
the perceived shift of mandate. Yes, there is a perception on what CETAs are, what should they be doing. There is lack of education out there on why they should, why they are in existence and so on. And that is why there's been a number of research conducted, about 9 of them, outside of the department, around the same question. But there is a reality, which is the Act itself. The Act is very clear in terms of the CETA function. Section 10 outlines those functions. Briefly, they are about the production of a plan, which basically says where are the future skills needs in companies, and putting those as a sectoral plan so that learners can know which kind of careers they can follow and which areas a training provider should prioritize. The second one is around the setting standards, promoting learnership, apprenticeships, and so on. That is all those programs. But it's mainly in the whole question of setting standards and assisting in the development of learning programs. The third one is around the disbursement of funding. Now you are correct, Chairperson, in asking this question around whether CETAs do employ training providers. The reality is that none of them employ trainers. They facilitate, they source those services. And maybe it's the language that we used when we report to say we train so many, and that then assumes that technically we employed a number of trainers or lecturers that did that. I think that the Act was very clear in drawing a distinction between those who should be providing and providing the incentives so that people can train in the right direction. Now, and there's a reason why it was like that. Work-based learning is not done in most cases in a classroom situation. It's done at work. Transnet has got the training center, ESCOM, and so on. So the training happens in a workplace. And the whole idea was to say, if companies, you are saying you have shortage of electricians, here is money, but we want to know to what level can you train and what numbers and the quality and so on, and we will monitor that. Otherwise, you don't get the money back if you train along those lines. So the majority of learners are being trained in the shop floor of the banks, in the various workplaces and so on. Then there's a second category, or amongst the very same learners, they may be trained at work for a 7-month period in a year, and then you'll find that in 3 months they have to go to an institution. Now, sometimes they will go to public institutions or they will go to private institutions. Then, I think going into the future, I think if we cement this area of the public institution, because in most cases they tended to work with the private institutions more than the public institutions. And what one of the issues of the transfer or the transfer is trying to address is to work on that relationship. And there was an intention to make sure that CETAs don't on their own schools, because there's been serious problems where CETAs or ITBs that were dissolved directly owned training centers. There were a number of problems. Whether we need to revisit that, I think that is a subject for debate. But I think in terms of labor brokers, what did not come up is the element of what we call employment and skills development agencies. And this may be people who take the hearing. Now, what happened, and I think the honorable member from, I think the DA raised this issue around the SMMEs not having been able to access grants. Now, because of that outcry, a number of them came to us to say, can you create a special vehicle that we can use to train especially people in the SMMEs that do not have the infrastructure? And the reason why it was like that was because of the acknowledgement of the fact that for every 1% that is employed in a formal sector like an automotive industry, if you go to the suppliers, maintenance and so on, right up to the person working in the backyard, there will be 5 to 10 times people compared to the one in the formal sector. And the outcry was that we create a vehicle. Yes, it is true that we have created what we call employment and skill development agencies, but those are regulated in terms of the Act, and their primary role is to assist SMMEs who do not necessarily have the infrastructure, the time, and so on, to recruit people and to ensure that they train. We have been having this debate, especially with the employment services agencies, and clarifying this issue around the labor broking, which in some cases is understood to be people who recruit other people and sell them to others to perform a job at a cheap price, in terms of what this debate around labor broking is. And I think there's going to be a challenge, and we have debated it also in the department, and we have constantly made it clear that we are distinguishing between employment services agencies and labor brokers, because there's a clear distinction around it. But the truth is that CETAs use intermediaries, and we may have to look at those intermediaries that may be having their legs on both sides, because they may create problems for us. And I think that what honorable members are raising is a fact that we need to relook at those who may be masquandering and having their legs on both sides, and that are in the process of damaging the work that we are doing. And I think we'll have to look at that. Lastly, honorable chairperson, on the training layoff, I must indicate that there are six areas that were identified when the question of recession was debated. The SARS customs fraud, the Industrial Development Corporation, which is to support companies that are in distress, the Competition Commission for people who are colluding in food prices, the key sectors support such as clothing, textiles, the National Debt Mediation Association for people who are already indebted, and the training layoff. Now, the training layoff, despite questions around it, it is amongst the most advanced if we take the six areas in terms of readiness to implement. Now, where we are briefly is that we have finalized the processes in terms of CCMA assisting us in determining those companies that are really in distress, because we realize that there are a lot of chances in the place. There will be unscrupulous employers who will come in because they knew that there is money and all that. So there is a clearly laid out process. You can visit the Department of Labor website, that of the CCMA and NEDLEC. We have published a guideline there. There is a guideline that the CCMA is finalizing on the internal process around how they are going to finalize the determination of those companies in distress and the allocation of money from both the UIF and the NSF to top up CETAs. And we met with CETAs last week on Wednesday to clarify their functions. There's a meeting next week to finalize that process. There was never an intention that this process should wait for the announcement. What we agreed with the minister was that we should start, and we are running with a number of processes so that when the announcement is made, hopefully in next week or the week after, there will be a number of companies that are running, because already we are involved in this process. There are issues that are still going to be finalized at NEDLEC on the 15th. That we must negotiate with social partners,
you may have noticed that there were disagreements around social wage contribution to finally agree on the workers getting 50% cut and so on. Because the way on the funding side the process is going to work is that we have this 2.4 billion and the question was how are we going to give it to companies. It's not going to be a free for all. Companies that are going to be given priorities are those that will demonstrate their commitment to pay the social wages. The workers that are also going to benefit are those that would be agreeing upfront on the 50% cut on their salaries. That is the agreement that we reached at NEDLAC. And the sitters that will also get a proportion of the 2.4 billion to work with the industries will depend on the amount of money that they've committed. And we will check the annual reports to match those funding. And that is how we're going to distribute the 2.4 billion. We've put systems, we've worked with Treasury to clear issues of procurement and all that so that we don't run into audit problems or we pay an employer who will run away. So we have tightened all those screws. It may have taken too long, but the detail was a challenge. But like I'm saying, if you look at all the six areas that we're looking at, the training layoff is the most advanced and ready in terms of implementation. Thanks, Chairperson. I may have skipped others, but...
going to leave it to you. You'll wait for other people to talk. Over to you, Mr. Long. Sir, quick one.
DDG, I raised something earlier on, and I said, I'll just repeat it quickly. 30 March 2009 financial year, 39.13% of the budget of the Department of Labor was underspent. My question was, having listened to the different speakers sitting here today, especially with some of them, with the track record that they have, in fact, all three of them, looking at FACET and looking at not only FACET, but in fact all three of them, looking what they're doing, money has been underspent. And these, some of these people are actually begging for more money, to put it in plain, simple English. What is the department going to do in order to solve this problem?
Thanks. Just to correct the 33%, if we are looking, referring to the Department of Labor's allocation from the vote, the under expenditure was 6% of the total, that is on the annual report of the department. And that is what is in the audited statement of the Department of Labor. Annual report that was tabled in Parliament. If we are talking about the total amount of monies in the CETA account, because these two are different, the CETAs and the CEO of the ETDP CETA tried to explain this. CETAs don't get a budget allocation upfront. They get money on a monthly basis depending on the collection that we make. Based on the tax that employers pay on a monthly basis. So there may be a nominal figure at the end of the beginning of the year which we make as a projection to say in this year, if all things are equal and the trend is going to continue as it is, the total amount of money that we are likely to collect by the end of the financial year will be X. That is how the budget of CETAs is determined. And that is why there is a fluctuation, and this question on the CHEDA, and I think it was an interesting question that we must look at, because with the recession, we anticipated in a number of sectors for the levy to go down. And sometimes there is an overpayment where you find that red money was paid to a sitter, and there is a recovery process, which I hope is not the case in this case. But also we know that with the increase in salaries, the quantum of CETA income has increased. Now, unfortunately, what you can't do and this is in terms of the law, is to take money that is collected for CHIEDA and gave it to ETDP and the vice versa, because the levy income goes to the CETA concern. What we always try and do is to use the NSF to leverage that cross kind of support and all that. But I will have to check. If it is the under expenditure in terms of the individual CETA, then maybe we can look at, because there is a distinction between the levy that goes to the CETAs and the budget allocation of the department. The vote allocation does not go to CETAs. Thank you.
Questions that are not clear, you'll be coming in October for the annual report of the Department of Labor. So you will take all the questions that have been asked and answered in a manner which is not satisfying into account when they're coming back. I just want to thank everybody for being patient and for a good input that you have made, members, and the presentation, good presentations, and the answering of questions by the sitters. It is very clear that though all these departments of government have the same objective,